Good morning. I'm going to call the Finance and Administration Committee meeting to order. Our agenda is before us, and are there any questions about the agenda? Hearing none. I move to the approval of the minutes. Are there any, is there a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Second?
Second. I guess we can't take any actions yet.
Where's Mr. Giancola?
Is he a committee member? He's not a committee member.
Oh, gosh darn.
We need.
Okay, we will go ahead.
Wait a minute. You only need half of the members, right?
We got the, we have Mr. Downey.
Yeah, we're okay. We're okay. We have a quorum.
Thank you.
You're okay.
Okay, all right. Half of a small number. Okay.
Yes.
The minute second. Any questions, discussions? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Okay, minutes approved. The agenda has several action items, and we will begin with the operating and capital budget, and this will take us through what we have come for with our operating budget, and then we'll move into the capital. Ms. Kissel, you begin.
And actually, I apologize. I should have made this note before, but could I ask the chairwoman if we can have the public hearing report first? Because that actually was on the capital program. And I wanted to make sure that we had that first before I discussed the operating and capital budget, because we actually incorporated some of those public hearing comments.
I hear no objections in hearing that.
Okay. Thank you.
That's an information item.
It's just information. Tom Harrington will be presenting the report on the public hearing for the 2011 capital program.
Okay, great. All right, good morning. Today's agenda item is to present the preliminary staff report on a public hearing held on the 2011 capital program of projects. We wanted to provide the information prior for the board's consideration prior to approval of the 2011 capital budget. Metro intends to apply for the federal FY 2010 grants that will support our FY 2011 capital improvement program, and these include the 5307 and 5309 formula grants, as well as the new dedicated PREA authorized funds. FTA requires that the program of projects, including sources and uses of funds, be available for public comment prior to changes in the region's Transportation Improvement Program, or TIP. And in fact, WMATA will put forward a TIP amendment next week that matches the recommended capital program for FY11. Next. The public comment period opened on May 15th, and it's been extended until June 14th. We held a public hearing on June 2nd. In terms of comments received to date, by email or in writing, we've actually received 7 as of today, and we had 6 people testify at the public hearing. In terms of comments heard at the hearing and through the written comments, first, funding levels are not sufficient to meet all the needs described in the 10-year capital needs inventory, so that recognized that it funded some of our needs but not all of the needs. The emphasis on state of good repair was seen to be important, but that we need to consider capacity enhancement and other projects that improve the rider's experience. One speaker testified in support of replacing Metro Access vehicles. One speaker noted the lack of capacity projects will inhibit Metro's ability to keep up with ridership growth. Another speaker noted that projects providing bus priority on roadways should be a funding priority because they improve efficiency, and in fact they gave that as an example of a project that could be funded if the capital program is repaid out of the operating funds. And finally, capital funding should not be used to help close operating budget gap was mentioned. Okay, and you do have a preliminary staff draft as a handout. We'll be finalizing that next week after the public comment period ends. In terms of next steps, June 15th, as I mentioned, we're going to finalize the staff report. June 16th, at the Transportation Planning Board, we'll put forward a TIP amendment that updates our FY11 information. June 24th is the board meeting to approve the FY 2011 capital budget. And June 25th is grant applications will be submitted, with an expectation of award in August.
Okay, any questions?
Please, the presentation.
Mr. Downey?
Go ahead. I note that you extended the comment period. Was that in order to meet a regulatory requirement for length of comments, or?
I think we wanted to be sure. Initially, the notice wasn't printed in Spanish, and we wanted to be sure that we put that notice out there and gave enough time for people to respond. So.
And so we are, as a committee, approving this today, but should some earth-shaking comment occur post this hearing and post what we've seen, we'll still have the board meeting.
Yes, this is the committee will move it to the board. Yeah. That's correct. And okay. The whole board will have the action item on the 24th of June.
Okay. And if anything should come in that time, I hope you'll flag it for our attention.
We will.
Yeah. And then on a substantive point, I would note, I agree with the comment that there is not enough money in here for those things that would add to the quality or quantity of service, but quite frankly, our priority has to be keeping up what we have, and that's my understanding of what's in the capital program.
Mr. Downing has covered both of the topics that I thought were extremely important, and certainly the issue of focus on state of good repair is an extremely important one, and safety is critical. And everybody would like to have as much money as all of their needs would require, but not all of us are able to do that. And locally right now, just about nobody is. So it's the fact that we are about $3 billion short over 10 years at this point. And hopefully, we can make up some of that as we move forward. Being able to see what's going to happen revenue-wise for the next 10 years right now is extremely difficult. And our hope is that the picture will be brighter, and we will have a greater set of resources to allow us to start to make some headway in that extra $3 billion that, at this point, don't appear to be funded. I was curious about the FTA awarding grants in August. Has the appropriation already been made?
These are grants. We are applying for grants for our FY11 program, but they're FY10 federal grants.
Oh, I thought we'd already applied for FY10 federal grants.
No. We are using the money that we're using this year are FY09 grants. It's always been like that.
Right. We're always 1 year behind. But normally we've applied. I mean, you don't need to wait for board approval for the FY10 submission, right?
We're not. We're applying.
Okay. So these are the grant. The June 25th is the grant applications for the 2011 funding.
For our 2011 funding, but it's FY10 federal grants that we're applying for.
Okay. We're actually waiting fairly late before we apply.
No, we always actually, in history, we have always applied for these grants during this time frame,
year.
June or July, when the board approves the budget. Okay. Because we apply, we have to, and let me explain, we have to apply for the grants with very specific project information. So the application has to reflect the projects that you're delivering. That's actually what holds it up. So in order to do this, we have to be sure that the board is approving of all of the projects that we are going to be applying.
So this is the FY10 federal funding, and typically they take a quarter to approve. So that's an optimistic view.
We've been assured by the FTA that they will expedite our grant and we're making sure that actually the application process is quite complete and comprehensive, so there's no back and forth and question that the FTA has.
Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you.
If I could just ask further about that.
Mr. Downey.
FTA may want to be cooperative, but one of their constraints is 13C sign-off, which typically labor wants 90 days.
Yeah.
It's possible to ask for relief for expedition, but otherwise 90 days is a given. I think one other comment. Mm-hmm. In terms of using, last year's federal money for next year, given the dysfunction in the Congress and the lateness of appropriations, it's essentially the only way to go. My recollection is that FTA did not apportion these funds until about a month ago because they had not received the full year appropriation. They can't tell you how much you have. It's impossible, unfortunately, to get out early and use the money any sooner.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. I just wanted to note, I think while the record shows that there were very few people participating in the public hearing, I think throughout our earlier operating budget, we heard lots of information about capital. So I think we have really been able to incorporate a great deal of information. So I think it's been a good process for us.
Yes, that's a great point. We work with the Riders Advisory Council and all of our outside stakeholders.
Okay. By the end, no other comments. Then this is an item that will move forward to the board for action at the 24th meeting. Okay. Now we can go back to the action items.
Okay. The next item is actually the approval of the 2011 budget for referral to the Board of Directors for the June 24th meeting, operating capital and some budget policies. So I'll first start with the operating budget. The next page. Next page, there we go. Okay, so we started this year in developing our operating budget with a $189 million gap, revenues, expenses on the top line. We actually had some puts and takes throughout the year to accommodate for safety initiatives as well as for safety recommendations that were made and increased that gap to $7 million. We were able to offset that to contain the gap as it was, and then the actions that we actually did to close the gap are the $16 million in departmental reductions that we actually have planned and made. We have actually some service area realignment with ADA, geographic corridor, but we'll be grandfathering the outside, the folks who are in that corridor, and we'll be making some expense changes to that, fare increases, which I'll discuss in detail later. And then the concept of borrowing preventative maintenance and paying it back. And I will just explain that concept in detail further in the presentation. In addition, rather than closing taking service actions, the board has directed to increase the additional jurisdictional subsidies in the amount of $25 million this year over and above what we currently have for FY10. And that actually closes the budget gap. That's a high-level view of that. Just to give you a little bit of background, which we've been through, but the operating budget is $1.4 billion this year. This is what it looks like by mode, bus, rail, and metro access. On the expense category, one of our largest expenses, obviously, is our labor to operate our bus and rail. We have fringe benefits, which is the second largest component of that. Just to break that out for you, about $150 million of that is health care benefits. Another $100 million of that is pension benefits. And then there's FICA and workers' compensation, which make up that fringe number. Services is primarily $100 million of that is actually metro access services. And then we have other services, hardware and software maintenance contracts, and other services that we have throughout the authority. Fuel, power, and diesel. Materials and supplies to operate, and then the other is about $43 million. Primarily, that's casualty and liability insurance, third-party claims, and then leases that we have. We sort of bucketed into one area just for this, although the budget book will have extreme level of detail on each one of these categories. This is just a summary view. The $1.4 billion revenue by mode. Again, most of the revenue is being derived from rail revenue and then bus revenue, metro access, and actually the second largest revenue driver is subsidy revenue. That's $572 million from our jurisdictional funding partners. The next chart.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
May we ask questions as we go, because this gets pretty complicated if we go
we
back.
We will, along. And we have a time limit on this, and we will say that's fine.
Just a quick question. As I looked at all those numbers, those are without operating reimbursables, is that right? Operating reimbursables are above and beyond the numbers you're showing us here? Or are they included in your $1.4 billion and all of those numbers?
I believe they're included, but I'll have to verify that.
Yeah, it looked to me like they weren't. I was trying to figure out where operating reimbursables actually showed up.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a budget book? we can...
For instance, you know, the circulator contract would have been against your contract numbers.
Oh, okay.
The circulator's not included.
It's separate, yeah.
Okay, so that's our operating... Where does that show up in our budget when we approve it?
We've typically... It typically shows up in the capital budget because there's...
The operating reimbursable?
Yes. That's something that we can consider as we finalize the budget.
Could we consider doing operating reimbursables against operating and capital reimbursables against capital?
We can actually incorporate...
Or a single reimbursable budget that's clearly labeled operating and capital as a subpart, you know, as two subparts, so we know what we're doing.
We can incorporate it into the operating budget. Currently, we have it separate.
I don't think we want to necessarily incorporate it within, mm-hmm. because you want to know that it's separate. But
that's
we
right.
need to make sure that we are approving it, both as a revenue and as an expenditure. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't clear to me where it was, so I just wanted to make sure it was there.
I think the approval on reimbursables is done by board action as they come along.
No, but on an annual basis. Right. This year's...
Right. So we can incorporate that into the resolution that we provide on June 24th, so we specifically lay out the reimbursables.
Well, make them part of the budget, not necessarily part of the operating budget, but, you know, there's the operating budget, the operating reimbursables, the capital budget, the capital reimbursables. If you want to put all the reimbursables right. together and say, here's the operating portion and here's the capital portion, that's fine, too.
We can do that.
But make that part of what we approve.
In subsequent slides, we have, there is information about the reimbursables. We may need to break it out according to your suggestion.
I think what Mr. Benjamin is simply saying is that this $1.4 billion number does not truly reflect the entire piece.
And later on in the presentation.
You do have it in the other slides there, but
I'm just trying
if
to be
it
clear.
Is part of the overall budget.
I just want to be clear so that we do talk about reimbursables later in here.
Right.
But I just want to be clear what you're asking. And I think what you're asking is that you want for the board to approve the June 24th budget, you want a separate area in the resolution that describes in total or in detail what the reimbursable budget is for operating.
I think that the tables that are there, one way or another, need to show operating reimbursables and capital reimbursables. I did see capital reimbursables pretty clearly in here. I must admit, maybe I missed it. I didn't see the operating.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
I understand.
Yes. I think that answers the question I was going to raise, which was why in the capital budget we had $16 million for the circulator. But
okay. All right.
I guess
so that is in there.
That's the operating and not buying a lot of buses.
Right. And Matt was pointing out it listed it under capital, but it really is an operating.
Yeah. Right. So if we do nothing other than just change the title and say reimbursables, and then have a subtitle operating and a subtitle capital, we solve the problem. We know what we're doing.
We can do that. On the staffing plan for FY11, the adopted headcount for FY10 was 10,853, which is operating and capital headcount total. So we actually list what the crosswalk is for what now the new staffing plan the board will be approving for FY11. We actually have had some reductions on the headcount of about 86, the administrative IT operations and Metro Access. Those reductions total about 86 headcount. And then the additions that you see on the next line total about 204 positions that we are adding. And most of those positions that we are adding are under a capital project delivery position or would be a grant position. Or our grant funding position. So as you can see, we have the biggest one is the 125 under operations, 61 track workers, schedule corrections, trainees, and bus schedules will all be falling under our capital program for headcount.
Madam Chair?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Benjamin and Mr. Dowd.
Okay. I am not going to object to what we're doing here, but I do want to make a point and be very clear about it. If I assume that all 86 people that you are reducing are against the operating budget,
yes.
And if I go through that capital total, if I go through the increases and take out anybody who's listed as being capital and anybody who's grant funded, even though they're operating, like the federal grant that covers the new officers, mm-hmm. I still get an increase of about 54 people. I would just note that although I can justify all of that because they are very clearly associated with things like safety, mm-hmm. That is happening at a time when it's going to affect, obviously, our 2012 budget, because the same problem we have now is going to be carried over into next year when we have to fund all of these people in the operating budget. And we're doing it at a time when all the local jurisdictions that fund this organization are either cutting staff or furloughing staff. So I can understand the rationale, and I'm not going to object, but I do want to at least note that we're doing something pretty significant here, unless I'm misreading your chart.
Actually, the reductions are all in operating, and the additions are all in capital.
Are you saying there's not a single person there that is
Well, we have the
track walkers are capital and schedule correction and
sorry, trainings. The bus and rail, pardon me, the 26 bus and rail schedulers will be operating. That's correct.
And the schedule correction people, those are operated people who are operating trains and buses, I presume.
Yes.
And track walkers we normally fund under operating.
They would be under capital, actually.
Will they forever
be
capital?
It will support the capital program.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
So
well, that
really
61 would get you to the point where you are not increasing the operating budget staffing, if you can put those in capital.
Yeah.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Mr. Downey.
I'd just like to ask the same question in the opposite direction.
Okay.
Do we have a plan with respect to the positions that are being reduced where we know what it is we will not be doing?
You're speaking specifically about the operating reductions
that
we're taking?
The 87 people we won't have, they were doing something they won't be doing in the future.
Yes.
And I just want to be sure we know what it is at the appropriate time that we're giving up. I hate to take cross-the-board cuts, random cuts. I think if you cut, you have to say, here's what we've stopped doing.
We have provided, as we went through this, because we were belt-tightening, every department, including IT and operations, myself included, took a large hit under procurement and some of the administrative operations. And we actually put together a staffing plan that would get us through to FY11. It's not pretty. It's more difficult.
But we know what it is we're giving up.
And we know what things specifically we're giving up. And we actually have communicated that in prior, during this budget process. We can certainly circulate that again, but we do know what we're giving up. Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Kessel. And to Mr. Benjamin's point, I think it's important that while we recognize that others may not be, I won't say that others are not increasing their budgets, but they are increasing them only in those areas that have significant need that will have an impact on the operation of the organization. And I think that's what we're saying here with the safety ones as well as the capital oversight ones that that we all agree need to be done. So, okay, go ahead, continue.
Again, on the bottom, I would like to point out before we leave this chart, we actually have, we have a much larger capital program to deliver, and we have a lot more expectations on us to deliver that with the funds, using them for the best use, and actually making sure the projects are right and ready. And as a result, we will be hiring program managers or have new jobs for program managers to do that. On the next chart, the operating plan of contracts, we had submitted this in May. It's a final submission now that has all of the operating plans, operating contracts that we plan to initiate in 2011, 123. Either new or modified contracts, and they're listed in the appendix for your review. On the rail fare changes, under the board direction, the regular boarding increases will increase by 18%, and those with paper fare cards will pay a additional 25 cents per trip, and those during the peak of the peak will pay between 7:39 and 4:36, a 20 cents peak of the peak additional charge. There will be a max fare at $5, and that will be subject to surcharges on paper fare cards that I just talked about, as well as peak of the peak. The discounted boarding charges will be 19% as a result, and those fare increases in the direction that we had received from the board will take place on June 27th, with the peak of the peak taking place when they're ready, and we expect that to be August 1st.
Madam Chair, very, very quick question. Mm-hmm. And this has actually been all the way through, and I haven't caught it before and really thought about it. On the line that says increase second tier of peak period mileage charge, it says 6 miles to peak. Does that mean 6 miles? What's
max.
Peak in
to,
that?
It's
a max
there. It should be to max.
Okay, all right. Thank you.
And in detail, we look at the bus fare changes. Here, the smart trip fare on a bus will increase by 25 cents or 20%. During the last fare increase on 2008, there was no increase on bus, and for bus riders who use smart trip cards. Those who use cash now will pay an additional 20 cents. So we're trying to promote the use of smart trip cards in that direction. One change from the previous fare table is the one you see on the $1.80. And actually, that is for the elderly and persons with disabilities. We previously had $1.85, and we actually changed it to $1.80 to comply with the federal regulations.
Right.
The next slide is the Metro Access, and I need to point out an error on the Metro Access. As the board directed us, the Metro Access fares, the maximum fare is $7, and that is inclusive of the zone charges. This slide indicates otherwise. I apologize for that. It's made clear later in the presentation, but as the board directed us, I believe it was 2 weeks ago, the $7 max cap on Metro Access fares is inclusive of the zone charges. So I apologize.
So the zone is included in the max.
Right. Thank you.
That's important.
And the implementation of twice a fixed route will be projected by September 1st to occur. On the pass implementation, we kept the direction was to increase passes by 15%. The short pass, the fast pass, and the transit link is less than the increase in the other rail prices, mainly because of the peak of the peak. So what we did not do when we implemented the peak of the peak, we did not incorporate the 20-cent peak-of-the-peak pricing when we priced the 7-day pass fares. So in order to ensure that those passes incorporate the travel time when people will be traveling during peak-of-the-peak, we actually now are recommending that the passes, and I'll show you the chart on the next page, 7-day pass for short and long, as well as the transit link pass, increases by $2. And actually, if we go to the next chart, I can show you what I'm talking about more clearly. On the June 27th pricing, board recommendation was going to be the pass prices that you see here. However, now, because we need to incorporate the peak of the peak in the pass pricing, we are recommending that the pricing for the 7-day short pass, the long pass, or the fast pass, and the transit link are increased. $2 for the top two, and then $10 on the transit link card. And that's based upon the amount of travel that'll happen between those peak period times. So that's a change from last month.
And that implies that these passes are used during the peak of the peak.
That's correct.
So you're saying to a person who travels off peak, we're going to charge you $2 more for the privilege of traveling during the peak, even though you don't do it.
Right. Well, we have done some analysis on the analysis that we have on these 7-day passes, because they're paper passes, is not, it's a judgment, and we're making that assumption that those are traveling on peak of the peak. For example, the 1-day pass, which is a magnetic card, they cannot travel on peak hours in the morning. So we're not going to increase that by the peak of the peak. But the assumption is, yes, that they're traveling.
The assumption is that you say most people who are using this are currently in the peak of the peak.
We don't have technical analysis for that because the passes are not tracked.
Sure, we'll hear from the people who don't travel
right.
in the peak of the peak.
Well, here's the issue. If we don't make the assumption that they're traveling on peak of the peak, then the passes actually will be a really good deal.
Yeah.
And most people will actually buy the passes in order to bypass the peak of the peak pricing. However, by August 1st, by September, when we have our smart trip cards, and we will actually be able to put the passes on the smart trip cards, we will then be able to track it more on a technical basis and get rid of the magnetic stripe passes.
Okay, I'll talk to you about that, but it seems to me then we could have an adjustment if they weren't traveling during the peak in terms of how much was deducted. But
The recommendation of the committee is keep the prices on June 27th that we had recommended. And then when we implement peak of the peak on August 1st, we actually incorporate the new pricing. We may have a difference because technically we will not be putting passes on the smart chip cards actually until September or October. So there might be a 2-month delay on that.
Yes, go ahead, Mr. Zimmerman.
So let me see, I understand this. We've got one set of fares that are going to start on June 27th.
Yes.
And we've got another set of fares that's going to start on August 1st.
To accommodate for the peak of the peak.
And then we're going to have pass things changing a month after that.
That's correct.
Okay. That's remember that a few weeks ago as we were talking about this, there was much concern from staff and a number of my colleagues about the difficulties of implementing a fare increase, mm-hmm. and particularly the problem of having to explain this to all kinds of people and all that's involved mm-hmm. in it. And the whole idea was to simplify that, and that's why you need lots of time. So it seems that, nonetheless, we're going to have the maximum confusing situation because we're going to be changing prices every month. And if you're somebody who's figuring out whether you pass, I don't know how you figure out what anything costs. We have an issue with passes that, Madam Chairman, I think needs to be addressed as we adopt this budget.
Yes.
For some years now, the local bus providers have been subsidizing Metro. Some folks, I don't know how many people in the room necessarily even remember that a little more than a decade ago, at the end of the 90s, the Metro bus system was in danger of collapsing. And there was a big regional effort to, see what could be done about it. And the result was an agreement regionally that accommodated a role for Metro bus, a role for local bus providers, and a rational basis for fares, including the integration of local fares, yes. so that people are now routinely traveling using a combination of their local provider, it might be Ride-On in Montgomery, Dash in Alexandria, Connector and so on, and Metrobus and Metro Rail. Of course, the Smart Trip card made things easier when we got them all over all these bus systems. And that has been part of our goal, to be an integrated transit system across the different providers. In order to accommodate that, the local providers made a number of sacrifices early on, which is to say the local governments which pay for those services were further subsidizing Metro, first because of the transfer and the unbalanced transfer. But they knew that Smart Trip was coming, and it was expected that when that came in and we got that on the buses, we would be able to get a balanced transfer and you'd get a fair distribution of revenue between the services. That turned out to take a lot longer than anybody thought. So the local providers were carrying Metrobus for longer in that aspect than I think had been anticipated. But everybody wants everything to go forward well and to provide the best service for transit riders. And so in the interest of regionalism, everybody went along with it. But there was still one aspect hanging out there, which was the regional passes. And the local providers have been honoring Metro's pass and not getting the revenue back that they're owed on the trips taken on their service. This is something nobody's really talked a whole lot about, again, because everybody wanted it to work, and we're assuming that it was going to get sorted out as soon as we got passes onto Smart Trip. Nobody thought that was going to take a decade, or we probably wouldn't have had this much cooperation over this much time. That is now beginning to fray, and we are seeing local providers saying, the heck with this. I can't afford this anymore. I'm having to look at cutting service because of increasing costs of riding Metro anyway, and now we're losing hundreds of thousands of dollars in the case of a couple of providers, maybe more than a million. Who knows? I don't know what the total amount is. I know it's a significant amount for my small provider, and that can't be anything compared to what it costs Connector or Ride-On or Dash. So now we're finally able to do this, and we don't have a commitment to fix this problem. And we continue here to characterize here at Metro as revenue sharing and as a revenue loss for Metro if we do this. And I think everyone needs to understand that the local providers don't want revenue shared with them. They want the return of the revenues that they are owed for trips that they are providing and paying for. So, Madam Chairman, I think it is vitally important that when we adopt this budget, I don't have a vote in this committee, or I'd move a recommendation here, that we direct that this problem is addressed and that, in fact, a system to reimburse the CERT local providers is in place by October 1st of this coming fiscal year. That's my suggestion.
Mr. Zimmerman, we can take that up and include it as part of the resolution when we adopt, because I do think it is the consensus for most of us in the region that we've waited and waited for this, and it is one that should be, now that we are this far into the Smart Trip and the ability to differentiate those, that it should be implemented. And yes.
I agree entirely with the principle of what we're talking about, obviously. Montgomery County does very well as a result of exactly what has been suggested. But I presume there would be a budgetary impact, and I'm trying to figure out how we put that in our budget.
Well, I think that's what Mrs. Kissel.
Yeah, I agree with Mr. Zimmerman. I haven't been here 10 years, so I don't know the pain that you've had. I do know that we have in our sights that we're going to be putting passes on our smart chip cards, and as a result, we have the technological ability to understand, you know, who is riding a dash bus, who is riding a ride bus, and then now there's no argument about that or discussion. Revenue can be passed where revenue should be provided. The purpose of the pilot program, and you'll see this in the next presentation under Smart Trip, is we'll finally have the technical ability to do that. And between July and September, we will be, when we say pilot, we'll be moving, we will be doing that network-wide on all buses, and there will be a protocol of what that pilot is so that we will be able to meet the date that you've suggested on October 1.
But
there will be a budget impact to that, I believe, and I don't know what it is.
I hope you appreciate that there will be a budget impact if you don't do something and the local providers say, you know, heck with this. We're not honoring Metro
Passes. There's no doubt about that.
And then instantly like that revenue disappears.
Yeah. There's no doubt about that. I just don't know what that dollar amount is. And until we actually have the technical capability to understand what riders are riding what regional buses.
I think we have something pretty good.
Well, yeah, okay. And I think that's been the issue, that the technical ability is there and that the region, other jurisdictional bus systems have worked with that technical transfer and now still not seeing the revenue. So I don't think there's, and I guess when we get I think we should include it as part of the resolution, and I don't know if we need a motion to put that in when we decide to move this forward. But I think it really.
At that time, we'd also come up with some estimate on how we're going to cover the cost.
I think.
For the loss of revenue.
There will be lost revenue
yes.
for Metro and again on the jurisdiction.
Right. So right. We want to do a balanced budget when we're done. Mm-hmm. So we would have to identify what it is that we would either reduce as a cost or increase as a revenue in order to make the budget balance.
Mm-hmm. That is true.
This time, I don't know what that is, and that's.
Madam Chairman, I just had another one that I thought we really should address here because, as has been noted in this conversation, there is a lot of complexity of the fare changes here.
Yeah.
And the users are going to have to figure out what their cost is in their transit service so that it is able for them to do so. And I saw the notice that we are started, that we should be able to do so. That is, a customer should be able to go online and figure that out.
Yes.
And I heard some folks experience some difficulties, so I hope that we are ready to do that. Mr. Zimmerman's talked about the timing of different changes, but most importantly, they should be able to start projecting their cost mm-hmm. based upon the information that we've been given right now, and they should be able to do so efficiently.
Chair.
Yes.
One more question, just a technical issue. We have identified here the change in boarding charge for express buses for elderly and disabled.
Yes.
I don't think I saw what our, and I know we have a policy and there's a federal law that requires us to provide reduced fares for persons with disabilities and senior citizens. There doesn't seem to me, as far as I can tell, anything here that says what those will be or say that we're doing the policy. Is that policy passed by the board and in place so that we don't have to do anything as we approve this? Or do we have to do something here to assure that we have met the federal and federal requirements as we adopt these new fares?
I don't know what we've done in the past on that, but we can include that in the resolution and when the board approves the budget so we can reflect what the federal requirements are and that we're abiding by them.
So you're going to put in the resolution what mm-hmm. the federal law is on persons with disabilities
sure.
and senior citizens?
I think we can. I'm looking at Carol O'Keefe, but I don't.
Well, it's not in the it's not in the resolution.
It's not currently in the resolution.
Actually, I was in the fair table, but I'm not seeing it.
Can we just make sure it's covered? Because that was one that we did change when we did our 10-cent increase.
Yeah,
I just want to make sure we don't do the same thing again.
Screwed it up, and we shouldn't screw it up again.
Yeah.
Okay.
Noted. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions on the operating?
Okay. So, actually, back to the point that Mr. Zimmerman was making, and I bring this up as a recommendation on the passes. The recommendation from staff is we introduce on June 27th the pass prices, and then when we introduce the peak of the peak in August, we actually then modify those three pass prices to reflect the peak of the peak. That's actually what the recommendation is. And I know we would try not to make it as confusing and do a better job at communicating that, but that's the recommendation currently.
I'm a little confused. So we would implement the increase. So for that short period of time.
It's a two-step increase. Thank you.
Right.
Just as we're doing on the two-step increase for peak at the peak. So riders will not be paying peak to peak on June 27th, but they will be paying peak of the peak on August 1. So it is a two-step increase for all riders, not just separating the pass riders. It's just that we have not incorporated the price for the second step in the pass. And that's what we're making the change now on that.
Okay. I think I'm comfortable. Any other questions? All right.
I have a question.
Yep.
Just getting back to our customers and having them understand what we're doing. Is the peak of the peak estimates in the trip planner now? Because I know some people have been trying to estimate, and I don't even think they know that they have to do two.
Right.
For instance, if you're on transit benefits, you have to submit twice.
Yes.
And I think we just need to communicate these things in public, because I know a lot of people are wondering, you know, how do I do this? And
it's a very good point. Actually, for everyone's knowledge, the customers who use smart benefits, federal and others, have to load their smart benefits probably a month early based upon their employer's guidelines. And as a result, we did update the trip planner. So when you go into the trip planner and you put the data in August 1, it'll show the increase of the price, the increased prices that we're recommending. And it has a header that says these are subject to board approval, because really they're not their estimates until the board approves them on the 24th of June. So we have updated the trip planner for that issue.
Okay. I had another question about peak of the peak. I know in our previous discussions at this committee, there was not a lot of this is a new concept for us, and there hasn't been a lot of data that we could use to understand kind of what the ridership changes are going to be and what the impacts are going to be on our customer base. The other question that was raised at a meeting, too, was whether our peak hours are set correctly. Mm-hmm. When we advertised it for the fare changes, and we actually looked at the ridership spread, they didn't really correlate very well. So my question is, you know, once we adopt this budget plan and these fare changes, I think we need to come back within a few months to really understand whether, number one, the revenues – we're hitting the revenue targets. But number two, since a lot of this is based on trying to shift ridership to where we may have a little more capacity, whether it is indeed working. And, you know, to the extent that we're trying to provide a reasonable service to our customers during those crowded hours, and we're asking them to pay a lot more for the service, I think we're obligated to come back quickly to really understand whether these things are indeed working. And whether we have to make adjustments at some point in order to deal with any problems that we see. So I'd like to encourage the committee to come back in sometime in January or February to take a good look at these facts, because I think, you know, these riders are heavily impacted by these fare changes.
Right, right. Well, I think we can develop something for adoption that will set some reporting periods so that we can look at the data.
We'll be able to do that.
It's another concern I would have. Peak of the peak going in on August 1st. A lot of people aren't going to be around. Mm-hmm. September 1st, they're not going to be around. I think we're going to have to doubly and triply communicate so that people don't come back for vacations or otherwise and not know what's going on.
Yes. Question. Rider raise an issue with me, and I'm not sure if I entirely understand if I have the arithmetic right, but the question is, when the fare goes up, this is relative to the 7-day short trip pass, that if the maximum that the pass covers essentially stays at 265,
mm-hmm.
and the fare goes up, it would appear that in order to sort of get your money out, you need to do 12 or 13 trips, whereas now it works at 10 trips, which is probably what most users are doing in the course of the week. And if that's correct, then it would appear that with the incentives, fewer people would have the reason to use that pass.
Mm-hmm.
And they would figure this out, presumably, and then you wouldn't get the revenue associated with it. And I'm not sure what that does to revenue estimates. But mm-hmm. doesn't it appear that we're making that pass a lot less desirable for some presumably knowable number of riders, mm-hmm. since presumably we have the data on actually what the usage is?
The increase to the pass's value, if you will, at the time that it's used, will be increased. And I believe the number is $3.05, that each trip will be worth $3.05, and that any travel above that would have to be paid by the customer. But we are compensating for that concern.
Okay. And so you are raising it enough so that essentially it's neutral in terms of the number of trips that it pays off at now and after the change?
We believe we've compensated for that, yes, at $3.05.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. All right, to the capital.
Okay, so we could move on to the capital budget. Oh, and actually, let me make a point. I'm sorry, the senior and disabled, that actually was just an error. It was at 690. Actually, the June 27th pricing should be 690. That's what we had calculated, but it really should be 750 because it's half the weekly bus pass, and the weekly bus pass is going to be $15. So we just made an error there. It should not be 690; it should be 750. So we corrected it. On the capital budget, so the capital program includes the new capital improvement plan budget of $709 million for FY11. Plus $22 million in reimbursables, and we'll get into the detail of that later. And then we have also ERA expenditures that we will be making in FY11. We've got pre-Metro Matters projects that will be followed through, carried over, and we have other reimbursable projects. If you look at it in total, I think I have it on the next page, but actually if you add those up, we are actually going to be implementing almost $1 billion capital program that is our CIP, reimbursables, and the rest of the stimulus funds. If you look at the next chart, it shows you how those sources of funds are laid out. The federal funds, we have APREA funds, and then we have the state and local match to both of those, which gets us to our $709 million. And on the uses of funds, we are looking at the state of good repair, which is a primary use, safety, and then some customer improvements that we're making in the six-year program. On the next chart, this actually is a source of funds chart, which you are hopefully familiar with by now, and it just lays out year by year, 6 years. At the bottom right-hand corner, it's a $4.9 billion plan. It shows the at the top, boxed in FY11, the formula grants that we typically apply for. The first two will be what we apply for in June 25th. And then the it'll show the dedicated funds, $150 million, which we will also apply for on June 25th, the match to those funds, and then we show by jurisdiction what those matches will be. Those match contributions there in those items do not include debt. The debt will be on the bottom, which actually would be incorporated not until 2014, and that's an assumption. Obviously, this is a six-year plan which will be reviewed annually. The debt that we're incorporating there is primarily would actually replace some of the legacy debt that will mature. We'll have some overlap by that. So as we're maturing debt in 2014 and 15, we'll be adding, the assumption is to add new debt. And that's typical of the prior Metro Matters capital project that we had, where we had a layer of debt. On the next page, again, my point, the adopted budget of $739 million this year, we are going to a proposed budget of over $1 billion, $700 million, which is a CIP, and the rest are reimbursable projects, which you, and as well as American Recovery Investment Acts, which we are we will be delivering throughout that year. It's a very large program. ARA expected funds that you see there, $149 million in 2010. The $145 million represents what we will spend in 2011. So we are expected to spend those funds by 2011.
Mr. Benjamin, could you just explain what the difference is between the reimbursable projects at the top and the reimbursable projects at the bottom?
Yes. Actually, we have the reimbursable, the $22 million on the 2011 that you see there is really the
It's the new budget. This is one of the issues that we've had, and something that you touched on earlier with presenting the reimbursable projects. We have both new budget, and that's what's represented at the top, the $22 million in new budget. The majority of that is the DC circulator, and then the project development programs from all of the jurisdictions. The amount that is on the bottom is a projection of expenditures, and it's really the carryover of budget from prior fiscal years. So the reimbursable projects are a different kind of animal. We carry over budget like a capital program. We add new budget each year like an operating budget. So I think that your suggestion earlier about pulling those out and treating them separately from the operating and the capital budgets and then distinguishing which are operating, which are capital would make this clear. But that's how that's represented in this chart.
Okay, so they're all reimbursables. But the bottom is the stuff that we have been doing, and the top is the stuff that we're going to be
right.
Doing.
The biggest piece in the bottom is the Dulles expansion project. So it's carryover budget.
Well, there's Dulles, there's okay. Glenmont parking facilities, and there's another project, the Southeast Bus Garage.
It would be nice if somehow or other we could consolidate. That's fine.
We can consolidate it.
Have the same discussion again.
Right. Well, and they reflect in the budget book the project definitions, right. And you follow the numbers there, but they don't. There isn't a distinction here. You go to the project definitions, you can find them.
We've had a history of treating these separately, and our intention is to treat it as a total capital budget so that we understand what our resource is spending their time on doing and what the project deliveries
are. Well, I think we agree that they need to be part of the total.
Yeah.
It's just how do you display them so we know what it is we're looking at.
Right.
And it doesn't get lost. I understand.
The CIP, these are the categories of investments that we will be making. The majority of the six-year program is obviously the state of good repair. It includes the purchase of new rail cars in here, new buses, new access vehicles, parts, maintenance, and rehabilitation of existing vehicles. The second highest expenditure category is the rail system infrastructure rehabilitation, and this includes the major projects that we have, like the red line rehabilitation and then the blue and orange line rehabilitation that Mr. Kubitschek is implementing. And the third one is systems technology, and includes actually the power upgrades that we need actually to do the 8-car train power upgrades, data center infrastructure upgrades as well. And then we have fast passenger facility improvements and so on. This is just a high-level category. In the back of the appendix and in the budget book, it'll have each project in detail.
Madam Chair, a question on that.
In an earlier draft, I could visibly see where the preventive maintenance line was in the detail.
Yes.
I don't see it now.
Yes.
I'd like to get a schedule that shows where those are so I can be certain that the $30 million that's being placed in this year's capital budget is removed from next year's in order to have to make a separate decision about that. Yeah. So since it's not a line item, I can't find it.
Mr. Denny, it's in the attachments, and the two project numbers I can give you.
I think I know where they are. I just want comfort.
Right, and it's in the attachments to the resolution.
Right, vehicle rehab and track rehab, but
yes.
I want to be sure.
Right. Mr. Giancola, and then Mr. Benjamin.
Yeah, thank you. As I sit here, I'm looking at the sheer number of this 2011 program. 709 And I'm just wondering, 2 years ago we cut the engineering staff, and even though you have identified bodies in the budget for additional support, can we really execute this program? And is someone or is staff really developed a strategy to at least telling us how you're going to execute it? So I'm a little concerned about the available staff to execute and QC this kind of program. So anybody want to comment on that?
Yes, sir, I will. One of the things that we are working on is exactly what you're talking about, a long-term staffing plan. For example, on the one of the approaches with the line segment concept is that whenever we approach that on the red line, there's several different phases of the project that are being worked on all at the same point in time to ensure that we basically are deploying the maintenance on time as well as monitoring our expenditures. The other component that we're looking at in-house is the hiring of additional program managers. And the other facet that we're looking at is improvement of our scheduling and estimating, and then also shoring up our materials that we're getting into our procurement side to ensure that we get through the process a lot faster and more effectively.
You know, the fact that you're hiring new program managers is an issue that raises concern because, you know, they have to know what they're doing, and I'm presuming we're hiring people that have experience, so I'm going to go on that assumption. But, you know, the whole concept of getting familiar with how we procure, how we manage, you know, that's going to be quite a task and challenge for you. And also, I think, are we exploring open-end contracts with engineering firms and in construction management firms to kind of assist in this effort rather than full-time staff?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that we do already have in place is a consultant service that's been working with us, just evaluating the overall, you know, departments and such to ensure that we maximize, you know, our efficiencies and also help us make recommendations on where we can work at in our acceleration. And I think the other byproduct is that we've been working or, you know, communicating with other transit authorities as well on their effective, you know, approaches on state of good repair as well, which has been a good resource on my part to kind of get their best practices as well and how we move these things effectively and keep these things, you know, on schedule as well. So that's been a lot of time that's been invested in there. But the project manager is definitely what we're bringing on board. The realignments that we're working on is totally focused on safe state of good repair, safety initiatives to ensure that we expend our money and get things in place as fast as possible.
I just share your concern. And in addition to what Dave outlined, we also have an RFP in the works, which I think is going out shortly, to get in consulting assistance in the whole program management, project management area to separate, to supplement what we're doing, because we do have to create a whole new infrastructure here, human infrastructure, to run this program. And we're running this as fast as we can to get there.
In that contract, which I understand you, I thought I saw it in the document, but I've lost it now, referred to as program management oversight. Is that correct?
That's correct.
That's correct. Yes. And I would just note, in other agencies, an independent engineer providing program management oversight will report regularly to the board on how the program is going. I'd be interested in whether that will be the practice here.
Mr. Benjamin, do you have a question?
Yeah, Madam Chair, once again, Mr. Downey has anticipated my questions and asked them, but I, given your answer, I did look in the attachment, and I was looking for where that preventive maintenance was. It's attachment C1, is that right?
It is.
I was looking for $60 million in there somewhere.
There are two projects.
Okay.
They're both under A, vehicles and vehicle parts. The first is under the third category called rehabilitation of rail cars.
What page?
It's page 44.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon me. Page 44 of the packet. Section A, vehicle parts.
Mm-hmm.
The third category, rehabilitation of rail cars. And the last project in that category, CIP 125, rail life cycle overhaul, is the line.
$30 million of the $40 million? Or how much?
That's 40 of the 60.
All of the $40 million.
40 of the 60 is rail. And you can see in the subsequent years, it decreases by 20 down to 20 million. The second piece is under the next category, rehabilitation of buses, and it's the very last one, bus life cycle overhaul, and that's 21 million.
Okay,
the 40
so
plus the 20 is the 60.
We need to know that those are the two preventive maintenance numbers.
That's correct.
All right. Now, you're keeping 30 million of the total, and you're dropping the second $30 million, right? At this point, we're up to $60 million worth of preventive maintenance.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Of which $30 million is staying, and $30 million we intend to repay and not make part of next year's budget.
That's correct.
Okay.
And if we would, if we put our thumbnail here, when we talk about that repayment, then that's, these are the ones that we're speaking specifically and timing-wise, and any additions that we move forward?
Well, we're talking about, yeah, as revenue, when we get to that point, as revenue increases and over the budget, we will actually reserve that in a special account that we'll be reporting on a quarterly basis. And then when that, there will be a time at, that we bring that to the board towards the end of the year, prior to the end of the year, and those monies then can be earmarked for write-in-ready projects, which is the intent, that are not currently in the six-year CIP.
Okay, Mr. Dinger, you have a question.
Or that are in the out
years. Oh, you're agreeing.
Did your last comment relate to the new Metro Matters agreement?
Yes, it did. That's what we're speaking
because
about.
Because we don't, pardon me?
That's what we're talking about, the capital program, the new capital program.
Right, but we don't have the new Metro Matters agreement before us, so we don't know. We don't know whether or not there is agreement on that agreement, because this board has not considered.
No, the board, right, that's correct.
The board has. I think it's advisable you say that, because what I was hearing were assumptions that something was in place and that a process had been agreed to, and we have not agreed to a process.
I'm not speaking about the agreement. I'm speaking about the project delivery in
the payments and how payments are made every two quarters and then three directions and so on. I'm just saying that's all described in the new Metro Matters agreement.
I apologize. I was not speaking about that. When I was speaking about the payments, I was talking about the agreement that the board has directed me to take reserve ridership numbers that are over the budget. That money would be reserved into an account to pay back the preventive maintenance. I'm not talking about the billing.
Well, let me then excuse myself from that comment.
Okay.
And just simply remind everyone that the new Metro Matters agreement, which has a great deal to do with the capital budget and how it is both collected and spent, has not been the subject of any consideration by this board as such. Whatever may have happened in other discussions, this board has not approved or disapproved or modified a new Metro Matters agreement, to my knowledge.
I believe we approved it to be sent out to the jurisdiction.
Right. But we haven't, there has been no substantive review of the Metro Matters agreement by this board.
Well, there is.
Unless something happened when I wasn't here.
There has not been a detailed step of each of the items of that are part of the Metro Matters agreement, but we did recommend the concepts that went out.
No, we didn't approve the concept. We simply referred it for consideration. Is what I'm remembering.
That's true. We've not adopted
We didn't approve any of the principles or any of the concepts, because I was here when we made that motion and I voted for it, which was simply to refer it for jurisdictional reaction.
But what was part of that document were a set of guidelines that were to be used to go out, and that was what was sent forth.
Right.
Are we working in circles?
I don't know.
What you're trying to understand
I think
versus what
things are getting curiouser and curiouser. The point is that a new Metro Matters agreement has not been approved.
That's correct.
I think we all
That's
agree
correct.
On that.
Okay,
one.
So if we agree on that, then we're home free.
Yes.
And so I just want to make it clear, because I have obviously very serious questions about what is in the draft Metro Matters agreement. Otherwise, I wouldn't be making this point. But
we'll
that's later. Later on, it's not at
that
this
is.
Meeting.
We have the steps of walking through what is in this capital budget, and then we will forward that to the board, and the agreement and the capital budget will be up for adoption.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Yes.
When will the agreement
24th.
Be? The 24th of June.
Yes.
Right.
That's correct.
Thank you.
One other point I would make on the FY11 budget to address Mr. Giancola's point and the discussion we had about the largeness of the FY11 capital budget is, of the $709 million, it's an expectation that a large payment will be made in the first quarter for the rail cars. So that actually takes it's an $80 million payment, give or take. So that takes a portion of that. It's still a big program. I'm just making that note to you.
No, I understand that. Yeah.
Okay. So if we move forward on the, Matt has so clarified as the new reimbursable programs, and we'll fix this going forward. It speaks about the new programs, as you see here, technology training, the DC downtown circulator, and the neutral host, and that's the $22 million that we listed in the prior chart. And then the sources of funds for that primarily are the District of Columbia, and then they're all reimbursables throughout their subsequent jurisdictions. So. And I agree with you, Mr. Benjamin, we should compile this, but right now it's very fragmented. But this is the what we call the non-Metro Matter capital projects that were not in the prior six-year agreement that we actually also track and capture. We show budget obligated and expended, and then we show in 11 what we anticipate spending. On the American Recovery Act, we expect to expend all of those American Recovery funds in FY11 on projects that have already been contracted and completed. We'll just get the delivery in FY11. And the reimbursable projects will be ongoing, and then we have some pre-Metro Matters projects, a small dollar amount that we will complete in FY11. In terms of the capital plan of contracts, which in this item includes the six-year CIP and reimbursable, so it does it distinguished by project, it's all the contracts. We have about $173 million in the appendix, which we are expecting the board to approve on June 24th. These are contract modifications and new contracts to continue the operations of the rail and bus authority, business systems, safety and security, and things like that. We have actually, of course, our capital budget is larger than that, so you might ask, why are those other plan of contracts in here for approval? Some of the things we left out to bring to the board on a separate basis. Those will be things, large things like big line segment projects that Mr. Kubicek will bring forward to the board for the blue and orange line. There'll be things like the 7,000 series rail car procurements, which we have brought forward separately. Jack Rieke will bring forward to you bus replacements and rehabs, and then we'll have bus garages and big projects. So those we're keeping separate, and you will be seeing them come forward to the board in the first quarter of the year.
Questions on the capital budget?
Yes.
If this proposal is accepted, what would be the total estimated capital spending for FY11?
Well, it's on an expenditure basis, so we are expected right now to spend $709 million, which is the budget, and whatever carry forward we have for this year, which we don't know what that is, we'll know in July and August.
We're advised by the D.C. Department of Transportation that there will be an estimated capital spending of just over $1 billion in FY11.
Mm-hmm.
Is that accurate?
That's accurate. In the prior chart, prior to you coming, I guess it was on page
22.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. We show the $1 billion capital project. The $709 million that I gave you was really just the six-year Metro Matters program, and then there'll be a reimbursable.
But I asked for the total.
Yes, I apologize. The total is $1 billion, as you see here.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so we have $1 billion in anticipated or estimated capital spending.
That's correct.
For FY11. If we spend $1 billion in capital spending in FY11, how would that compare to what we're spending in FY10?
FY10, our spending projections year to date. If you look in your latest financial performance report, but I will give this to you. In general, it's about double, but I will give you the exact number if that's what you'd like.
it's so in FY11 we're anticipating spending double the amount that we're going to spend in FY10.
Currently, the expended amount just for Metro Matters, and I have to clarify this. So, of the 527 budget, we are currently year to date as of May have spent 274 million dollars of the 527
spent not obligated.
No, that's spent. Obligated, we've obligated 440 million.
Right. That's spent, correct. So you're right now, we have how many weeks left of this fiscal year?
This only reflects April, so we have May and June to go. 2 months.
So we have
which are typically higher spending months, but
right, but in 2 months. But so year to date, our latest numbers are 207 and some million.
That's correct.
And you anticipate spending in FY11, $1 billion.
The $274 million is against the $527.
I understand. I understand. But you know, it raises an obvious question for me, you know, as to how much confidence can we have in the notion that Metro WMATA is going to be capable of effectively spending $1 billion in capital, which far, 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 far exceeds any capital spending for any year that I have been on the board. And in fact, do we not have monies even left over from pre-Metro Matters at this point? Are there not $60 million unspent from pre-2005?
It's approximately 32. It's approximately $32 million in pre-Metro Matters that remains
but
unexpended.
Still this, okay, $32 million from, which has been there for 5-6 years. I mean, I'm just trying to get a handle on how realistic it is for us to make a budget decision on the premise that this authority is going to be able to spend $1 billion next year on capital projects. Let me ask Mr. Soros to respond to this, because I think he's in a position to speak to the capacities of the agency.
Well, as I said earlier, in response to Mr. Giancola's question, it's quite a challenge. We have to ramp up this capital program. We're hiring project managers. We're hiring a capital program manager, you know, through consulting services to help us out. It's going to be a challenge, but the goal is to do it, and we're going to try to get there as best we can. It's going to be a challenging year for this.
I just wanted to ask about the statement he made. Mr. Searles, when you say it's the goal to do it, you define the goal being?
The goal is to spend this money and get the projects done.
But is it driven by it's the projects that are driving it, is it not?
Yes. Okay. Yes, and it's important projects. These are state of good repair projects, things we should be doing. It's not other things that are desirable. We're way behind the curve on this sort of thing, so we got to catch up, and this is the first step along the way.
And I just wanted to note the positions we talked about earlier were positions put in place because our lack of efficiently doing that in the last capital piece.
Exactly.
So,
as was pointed out earlier, basically the organization that ran the major capital projects was dismantled. And now, as we're faced with the challenge of restoring the infrastructure and the rolling stock to a state of good repair, we have to ramp up that organization again. And that's as soon as it became evident to me when I got here that we were facing this challenge, that's what we started to work on right away. And it's going to be, you know, run fast and catch up.
Can I resume?
Yes.
One of the reasons why this is so very relevant to me is to be found on page 2 of the resolution, paragraph 8, wherein we state that we are going to approve the use of $60.7 million of capital funds to pay for preventative maintenance that would otherwise have been funded out of the operating budget. Thank you for finally stating that accurately. Provided, however, and here's the clause, provided, however, that a fair revenue exceeds the amount budgeted or expenditure savings are achieved, any excess up to $60.7 million will be transferred to the capital budget to fund up to $60.7 million of additional project expenditures. What this means is, at a time, we're still in this, of cutting. You know, we were able to resist, happily, a lot of service cuts. At a time, though, that when we've cut our workforce, we have cut various other projects and programs, and we have on the table what I consider to be an extraordinarily ambitious spending goal of $1 billion in capital, where I really don't feel any great sense of confidence from past experience that you'll be able to do it, even though I would love it to happen. You know what I'm saying? I'd love this to happen. Is that we are making a commitment in our budget resolution to take even more capital dollars, to send even more capital dollars to a spending plan that is already at the level of $1 billion. So, at a minimum, you know, I'm willing to say, okay, let's be very ambitious. We know we need to spend this money. Let's hope we can do so. But I would like to see this clause dropped, or at least modified in a way where we have to have some kind of a board reconsideration of this issue in light of what the capital spending is. Because to add more, and this is, if I may take a sheet from the state of Maryland, and what they were saying just a few weeks ago, you know, what is the point of committing more capital dollars to a budget that is already not likely to reach, not likely to spend what it already has? And so it's all good in principle, but in reality, we are cutting other things. I'd like to see if it isn't possible to use some of this additional revenue from fare increases for other purposes at this agency.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Dowling and Mr. Benjamin.
If we are successful in obligating the $1 billion, and if we are successful in repaying capital maintenance, we still will not be meeting the state of good repair needs of this agency. And I think that has to be, for me, absolutely the highest priority. If we can't do it in 2011, I would roll that money forward to 2012 and do it then. I would not be taking from the capital program to put frills on the system.
Once again, Mr. Downey has anticipated my comment. Mr. Graham, one of the things you missed earlier was we talked about the fact that over a 10-year period, we are $3 billion short of what our capital needs truly are. So there's no question that as we borrow this year an additional $30 million from capital, to the extent that we can possibly repay that, we need to do so in order to make sure that we do the minimum to get our system not only in a state of good repair, but also to deal with the fact that more people are going to be riding and we're going to need to expand our equipment and our facilities to accomplish that.
Okay, we're not at the resolution at this point, but I guess since we have had this discussion, I just think that what we're trying to say in this capital budget is our failure to be able to meet that budget prior to now should not be an obligation to continue in that failure. It doesn't change the need, and it doesn't change what we should be committed to. I think most importantly, it would poorly reflect, I think, on us having gone to the well to ask for additional funding for that specific purpose and then decide that we would not try at least to meet that obligation. So I can understand what you are saying based on the past, but I think we should not be programming on the basis of a past when the future that sits in front of us is a failure to be able to maintain the system that we're committed to operate. So
I want to respond to the two comments because, you know, I mean, I was here in this seat when the state of Maryland said we're not going to pay two quarters of our capital obligation for FY10 because Metro doesn't need it. That's what they said, and we need it for other things. That's what we heard from Annapolis.
Mr. Graham.
Let me finish. And so I reacted to that at the time by saying, you know, you should not. The answer to whether Metro can efficiently procure monies is not to withdraw monies from the system. And I argued vociferously that Maryland ought not to pursue that line of thinking and should restore their capital obligation, which they did. As a result of my comments and a number of other people's comments. But I'm just saying that there is vitality to that when we turn to $1 billion, more, $1 billion, you know, capital budget goal in terms of not obligation, in terms of spending. And I'm just saying that you know, and please don't put me in the corner of not caring about safety or not caring about equipment or not, you know, I've been on this board 12 years and I've cared about all those issues. I'm just saying that there are additional needs that we have cut. And to the extent to which we can review this and say, perhaps at this time next year, golly, you know, we're only spending $500 million of our billion-dollar goal. Why should we be replenishing this fund by an additional $10 million? That's all I'm asking. And so I don't want to be characterized as somebody who's being reckless with preventative maintenance or reckless with capital needs, because I'm not. I'm just suggesting that if we need the money, by all means, let's spend it, no question about it. But based on 12 years of experience at this authority on this board, in terms of this staff's ability to spend capital dollars, you know, I don't think it's likely we're going to reach $1 billion. So I wonder about this clause in the resolution.
All right, Mr. Benjamin.
Actually, may I defer to Ms. Hewlett, who I think wants to make pretty much the same comment I do, but I might want to add to her comment.
Well, you can go ahead first.
Okay, I'll go ahead. Mr. Graham, I really, really am upset about the fact that you're mischaracterizing what happened with the state of Maryland, which was not taking money out of the program. It was saying we will provide the money when the expenditure actually occurs. And in fact, if you look at the new capital agreement immortalizes that and says we are going to pay the money as it's needed. So of this $1 billion, we will try to spend it all. And if we don't, then the jurisdictions will be providing the amount that needs to be provided at the time that it will be spent. So that provision, which Maryland was very strong about, we now have all agreed to. There's a big difference between taking the money and spending it on something else and delaying when you provide the cash to cover the actual expense. What we're all talking about is delaying the time until the cash is provided, but we're all saying we need to retain the use of this money for this purpose, because without it, we won't be doing our capital program. And that distinction is very, very critical, and please do not mischaracterize what Maryland did and what other people have talked about doing.
Thank you. If I may add to that, the chairman did cover most of my comments, but to reiterate, the commitment from Maryland's commitment was always there. Let me just stop for a second, because I'm sorry, I just wanted to address you because your comments addressed Maryland. Maryland's commitment was always there. We never wavered on that. And, but the issue was, you know, we said we would provide it as needed. It was expenditure-based, and now we're looking towards an agreement that is more expenditure-based. So that's something that I think all of us agreed on. And what I found interesting was I heard you say you don't want to be painted as someone who's not caring about public safety. And that's the same way, that's how Maryland was too, although I see folks took shots at that point in time as well. But none of us are opposed to public safety. We all care about public safety, so we will not paint you in that regard, but I took exception to us being painted in that regard before. So I just wanted to emphasize that the commitment was always there, and now we have an agreement that is, or will have an agreement, at least we're approaching an agreement that is more expenditure-based. And I did hear Mr. Sarles emphasize, I understand you think it's unrealistic, but Mr. Sarles is emphasizing that we have to ramp up this capital program because it's imperative for the safety of our customers and it's imperative to the survival of WMATA. So I have faith in the fact that you will take great measures to ramp this process up. Thank you.
All right, thank you all. We are still on the capital budget.
Yes.
And the metro access.
Okay, so, and I know Dave wants to make a comment, and I'll try to make it for him, and he will chime in. One of the biggest things the board can do for Metro, and hopefully we have provided you the opportunity to do this versus what happened last year. Last year we brought our plan of contracts to the board in June to approve. It was large, and the board did not approve it because staff did not do a detailed enough job to show what we were doing on our capital program delivery. As a result, that has hampered our ability to deliver projects. And this is not new. I know other folks have mentioned this before as our inability. There's other issues of why we have not done that as well, and we are shoring them up. The program manager, the augmentation of program manager to help us with that. The fact is, the biggest thing that the board can do for us now is to approve those plans of contracts, and hopefully we have done our job, and Dave's group has done it as well, to give you the detail that you need to approve that. So I wanted to reiterate what Dave, I know, was going to say.
Just to reinforce that, the plan of contracts is extremely important because it sets the cornerstone for us to begin the process starting July 1. And last year, whenever we were unable to get that approved, we lost 6 to 8 months in certain areas. And so that's why we're really focused on this effort. We're taking this extremely serious. The state of good repair is, you know, ever-pressing, and the one thing that's out there is continuously the service that we're providing in access, bus and rail, continues on a daily basis. And with that comes wear and tear, and we have to get out in front of that. If not, we're going to continue to have other potential issues that should be avoided.
Mr. Hughes, I thank you for that. And I think there is an additional concern, and I think that in order to make sure that we make our commitment, it's a policy and process change. And I guess I'm going to recognize Mr. Benjamin, and he was asking to be recognized, that we do everything before the approval process so that we can be all in agreement on it. That's yes.
Madam Chair, one of the key issues here is that the staff has done an excellent job putting together a plan of contracts that provides enough information for us to know what questions to ask and for our staffs to really focus on this issue and be able to determine whether these are, in fact, the right contracts and we feel comfortable going ahead with them. Unfortunately, the JCC, our staffs together, have been focused so heavily on the capital agreement that they really haven't been able to spend the time that they really need to go through this. I have no problem with us approving it when we get to our board meeting, but I would suggest that what we do is, because they haven't been able to ask some of those questions, not because of anything staff has done, but only because of the fact that they've been diverted, that within the next 2 weeks between now and when the board meeting occurs, the JCC do the reviews that they have not been able to do so far, and that this committee just send the plan of contracts ahead without recommendation to the board, so that the board can act on it after that review has been done by the JCC and we have all been advised and the questions that we all wanted to ask have been asked.
Madam Chair, on that, I fully appreciate that. The only thing I would say is that if we want to move this capital program the way we have to, that we complete that review and get those questions and answers done before the board meeting.
Absolutely. That would be my intent.
And I think we're asking that the staff would be available to make that happen with our jurisdictional staff.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I would just like to second the point that we need to get this approved.
Right.
If we're going to, if the JCC and reviews within reviews has questions and they happen to apply to a single project, I would say tell us about that and pull it off the list. But the bulk of this list ought to be in stone, so we move forward.
Yeah, it appears to me that, you know, most of the stuff that I look at looks fine. And I think everybody feels that way. But there were some where, really, you know, further questions should be asked, and it was carefully set up so that that could happen. It just didn't. Yeah. And that
but it
was,
should not hold up.
Should not hold up the process. Yeah. We don't want to not approve it on the 24th, but we would like to have that time spent. So I'm just suggesting we send it without action.
Absolutely. Madam Chair, I have one other question. Okay. My earlier comment about the project management oversight, right. Now I see that's where it was. If I find the right line item, it says it will be coming to the board, well, it'll be awarded 8-1, which I assume means it'll be coming to the board in July. When that is brought, I do want to get a clear picture of what the reporting responsibilities will be of the PMO, which is one of our ways of keeping oversight to assure that Mr. Charles' goal of getting the $1 billion spent is actually happening.
And just to clarify, the PMO, program oversight, actually, is to implement, the assistance that we need, the solicitations, the estimating, the scheduling, the milestones, the tracking of the projects. It's a very comprehensive augmentation.
But I'd like to see a reporting part of that that will keep us apprised on a regular basis of the progress that's being made.
We will add that.
As part of the next capital funding agreement, there are new reporting requirements, and I think that that's something that we can include in the reporting requirements in the funding agreement.
Having such oversight responsibilities elsewhere has made it possible to achieve the kinds of goals we're talking about, and I'd like to see it here.
Okay.
Not a year from now saying we fell short, but month by month, where are we? Where are we with awards? Where are we with expenditures? Where are we with processes that need to be changed in order to assure that we meet schedules? We just can't let it sit for a year.
Okay.
Ms. Kissel, if we can get through.
Yeah, just changes. This is just the changes from the plan of contracts from May. We restored, this was when we had a revised budget that would have been lower, and now we're up to the $5 billion six-year plan, so we just added these in there, but it's in your package. Some policy questions. I would ask Christian Kent to come up to talk about this, if you have any questions.
He's here.
He's there. Anyway. Go ahead, Christian. Thank you.
As promised. Well, good morning. The first point on Metro Access is relating to the fares, and pursuant to the direction that was given by the board in the last meeting, we are making a change, a departure from the flat fare structure that we've had for some years to indexing the paratransit fare to the comparable fare that would have been charged on bus or rail times two, and that is what ADA allows us to do. The only change to the original portrayal of this from the originally proposed budget is that now the fare will be capped at $7. So under the new proposed fare plan, then what would happen is the customer would make a reservation where the origin and destination would be compared to that same trip being taken on bus or rail. That fare would be calculated and multiplied times two. If the customer is currently a user who goes outside of the ADA service area, the three-quarter mile of existing bus service or rail service, then the supplemental fare would also apply. The supplemental fares have all been increased in each zone by $1. So that customer would pay a combination of the base fare plus the supplemental fare, but even then, still, the $7 cap will apply. So no Metro Access customer will pay more than $7 for any one-way trip. And again, in the revised budget proposal, those customers who are currently using Metro Access beyond that three-quarter mile corridor will be able to continue to do so under the grandfathering provision. But this is a significant departure in policy for everyone else, that if you are not currently using the service in that manner, that once this policy is adopted, that Metro Access no longer will provide service beyond the three-quarter mile corridor. Are there questions on that?
Mr. Graham has a question.
Yeah, the question, I have two questions on Metro Access. First is how many Metro Access customers currently exceed the three-quarter mile limit?
We did a comparison on that for FY09, and we found that there were approximately 1,200 customers during that fiscal year that made a trip outside of the corridor, resulting in approximately 61,000 out-of-corridor trips.
At what cost?
Well, there's one cost per passenger of $38.
No, what cost to us? Excuse me. Let me be clear. What cost to the system?
$38 for each of those trips.
I think he's looking for the total cost in the budget. But what's
the budget impact of these? How many did you say, 1,200?
1,200 individual customers affected, but it's 61,000 trips times $38.
And do you have an idea? I mean, I suppose I do that myself.
So $2.3 million.
$2.3 million. And how are you going to determine in the future who previously did this and who didn't, and what the criteria is? If they did it once, is that okay now they can do it 12 times? If they did it 12 times, can they now do it 50 times? I mean, well, what are the standards and criteria that are going to be used for this process?
Our intention was to take, over the last year, all of the trips that have been taken, and anyone, any of the customers who have traveled outside of the corridor even one time would be considered someone who had a need for that service.
Even just one time?
Yes, sir. And that even then, that going forward, that there would not be a limitation on how often they would be able to do that, with the assumption that every time they do, they're going to pay the supplemental fare, and that that would allow them to continue to have the ability to use Metro Access the way that they have in the past.
Well, what I'm wondering is, would it be possible to set up a standard, since you're going to have some judgment calls here anyway, sometimes, you know, that those riders who have shown a pattern of regular use, you know, may continue to do it, and we can define that. That can be a defined term. And those who have used it only rarely, you know, would not qualify. Because I think that what we have, this board has, this is a painful and difficult set of issues. But this board has wrestled with these issues. I'm concerned about going forward. This is a major cost consideration for various of us. And I'm now that you've answered my question, to say that if you just did it once, you are going to be entitled for the foreseeable future, you know, to continue to do it as often as you want, you know, it seems to me to be, again, a very, very liberal policy indeed.
Well, I would offer one response, that our observation about the growth of the cost of the program has been much more attributable to more people using the service than people using it more, and that the population of the current ridership that go outside the ADA service area is relatively small. I mean, 61,000 trips out of 2.4 million over the year. So, you know, I think overall, I don't really think that it would be a substantial impact or a great likelihood that by grandfathering the current participants that they would in the future develop more of a need to make use of that type of service than they have in the past.
Well, I don't know whether others are concerned about this, if they're not.
I think there are all kinds of concerns. I think what we have done in making adjustments this year is to try and make adjustments that are reasonable in terms of serving the population of paratransit, as well as within the framework that we can understand how best to serve them. That is, there's a lot we don't know. You just raised the one particular piece. I don't think we want to be perceived as if we're simply trying to throw people out of a system. We're trying to be able to provide the service efficiently, effectively to them, but within a sense of containment, as we've done with all cost in the authority. So I think rather than us jumping as far as we think we should go into this with no knowledge of how we're going to impact people, I think is a caution that I think the staff has made with a commitment to continue to review this. And I think the FY20 budget should be, how do we really work with the population that we're serving and try and devise a process that helps us deliver this service well. And I think one issue that has been raised is that we need to find out how we can work with our stakeholders that have a greater responsibility in this overall transportation issue of paratransit, mm-hmm, to become partners in the subsidy that provides. So I think it's not going to stop with the actions here, but I think we've been cautious in a way that I think is reflective of our sensitivity to the fact that even though that person may have been one time within our count, we need to understand how should the service be delivered efficiently, and understanding around this region how all of us provide those services and how it comes back to the responsibility of WMATA in that.
How many, what's the total riders?
How many enrolled customers? Approximately 26,000.
Madam Chair, I echo your sentiments, actually. And Mr. Graham, I understand what you're trying to get at. This is a problem we've been trying to wrap our arms around for a long, long time. I think we have taken some major steps this budget. And I don't know, and as Ms. Hudgens said, we'll be working with stakeholders and also doing increased travel training. I think we're putting a lot more emphasis on that, and that will be of help too. And as Mr. Kent indicated, it's not more people. What did you say? It's not more people.
It's not people using the service more.
More. It's more people using. Thank
right,
you.
Right. Right.
And I think with that, you know, I think we're in a good place right now. And I think grandfathering is grandfathering. I think if you make a judgment call as to, okay, well, does one trip constitute grandfathering or three trips? I think it becomes difficult. I mean, the normal usage of grandfathering, I think. This is pretty clear for our many customers now, and I think it's a major step. We will be looking at it again next year, but I think this was a good and fair step to our customers at this point.
Any others?
Really, and really, I think the advantage to the authority in looking at the economic considerations, that the bigger bang for our buck is the idea that everyone else is being asked to focus on where does the fixed route service go. How can we help people with disabilities really use that? And the more often that occurs, that's really where the paratransit costs can be mitigated. So this is actually a really important step in helping us to realign our focus to fixed route services. And we do really have among the most accessible fixed route systems in the world. So we really are wanting to do a much better job at promoting that. And we have done that in the past with the free ride program, and we're going to allude to that in a second here. But this is really an important step, and again, focusing on fixed route service. So we mentioned that the out-of-corridor service beyond the three-quarter mile of the fixed route system would stop after this. But what we have also tried to do is, for the ease of understanding for customers, that we have kept the same structure of days and hours of service, so that will be easier for people to know that if they've been using the service, you know, by time of day, they're not going to have to look up to see if we're going to change the level of service we provide by the hour. So we've put some detail on that. The last item refers to the free ride program. We have, since 2004, allowed every Metro Access customer unlimited free use of bus and rail. And that has been very successful. We've come before you a few times and mentioned that from a cost avoidance standpoint, that many millions of dollars have been saved. But the real issue now is that as we tighten and refine our eligibility process, each applicant for Metro Access service is being asked in more detail, where are the circumstances that you could use bus or rail? Those discussions have taken place already over the last year since we centralized the function here in the building, and we've already seen some measurable results on that, very favorable. But the issue with the free ride program is that technically, if someone really does qualify for Metro Access service without conditions, then that says they are unable under any circumstances to use the fixed route system. And where we're trying to go is to say that if you have any ability to use the fixed route system, and we're trying to distinguish between who has a real need for the paratransit service and who does not, then we want the customer to be encouraged to disclose these are the areas where fixed route service can be used. And so as soon as they say, I do have an ability to use the service at any point, then it follows that they would have the free ride benefit. But if we're going to have a discussion and say, I am unable to use it under any circumstances, then to give the free ride benefit anyway calls into question then, you know, well, then how would it be used? What would it be used for? So we're trying to be conservative about the way the free ride benefit is being offered.
Mr. Zimmerman?
This makes no sense to me at all. Anytime anyone who could use Metro Access chooses to use the regular service, we save money. We save a lot of money. What possible benefit is it to us to complicate the system by saying some get it and some don't, and these are the requirements, and foreclosing for someone who might, for some reason or other, use the regular system doing so? It just, I see no benefit from this at all. I understand why in some technical way it makes sense that if someone were, you know, deemed to be ineligible to use the regular service, that you wouldn't need to, but presumably then they're not going to write it. If they do then write it, you maybe you got a basis to have a conversation with them. But what is the benefit to the system of saying we're going to create two classes of Metro Access users, and some of them don't get the free ride, but the others do? It just seems to me a needless complication that incentivizes the wrong kind of behavior. We did this to incentivize behavior that is a benefit to the system and everyone else, and curtailing that now seems to me to bring no benefits to us other than some fastidiousness that I really don't think we need to pursue.
May I ask that then, are you saying that you think that this change encourages more paratransit use by the paratransit applicant as opposed to fixed route use?
Well, it clearly would remove the incentive they would have to use the fixed route system that we have given by providing the free ride. And since the paratransit ride costs like $38, and so we, you know, even if we got the maximum $7 from them, we're paying $31 for them on that trip. If they took a ride that only costs us $2 or $3, we save a whole lot of money. So what's the reason to complicate the tariff in this matter? It just doesn't seem to me to make any sense. Now, if you come back to me in a couple of years and you say, gee, it turns out that a whole bunch of the people that we say that, you know, claim that they can't ever use the fixed route system are using it, that would be interesting to know. But that's not a problem for us. That's a problem for them. You know, again, I'd like to hear my colleagues, but I don't see any reason for us to now curtail the free ride program in this manner. I just don't see a benefit to the system for doing so.
Let me ask it this way, because I think the question is, when we think of the subsidy that we provide already, if we would reduce the number of paratransit rides, we would reduce that subsidy even by giving a free ride, would we not?
Well, and see, we're doing that now. And I would say, you know, as someone who's responsible for trying to put together the budget for this program, the concept is definitely not lost on us that we want people to use the fixed route service. That's the whole theme behind this. But we would not be curtailing some rigid policy that you can't use the fixed route system. What we're saying is that it's simply contingent on the fact that the applicant has to say, I have the ability to do this. And I think right now, all that would have to happen is that if a customer was fully eligible for Metro Access and the determination assessment interview says that they are unable under any circumstance to do so, then they're not going to have any need for the free ride program. If they come and say, I now have this ability, then what we get out of that is a data point in our database as to what portion of the paratransit ridership can use fixed route services, so that as we go forward in the future, we know two things. We know that the paratransit service is being used by the people who really need it, and we know that when we're trying to create fixed route options for people with disabilities, that we know which ones of our paratransit customers are able to make use of it. At the moment, we have a one-size-fits-all. We can't look in the database and make that distinction. So that's the purpose of this. The free ride program is an incentive to disclose and make use of the fixed route service. If I want that free ride, then I'm going to say, yes, I'm a person who will use it. And then we have that data point.
Yes, Mr. Graham.
Yeah, I'm looking at the – I guess I'm not supposed to be looking at the resolution.
Some days you are, yes.
But I'm not finding the provision that you're describing in the resolution. I'm finding in paragraph 12,
item 12,
a provision which maybe I'm just reading and not understanding. But this says to me that you can get a free, you can participate in the free ride program only if you're determined. Only if you're determined to be conditionally eligible for paratransit service. So maybe I read that to mean if you're if you're conditionally eligible for paratransit service, you're eligible for the free ride program.
The intent
is... That's what
these
words mean to me.
Well, it says conditionally eligible. So in other words, what that means is after we have brought the customer in for their assessment appointment,
well, I know
it has...
preliminary, but...
It's been determined that they have the ability to use bus or rail sometimes, but
what?
That they also... They have the ability to use bus and rail sometimes.
Well, is that how you define the term conditionally eligible?
Yes, sir.
So somebody... Is that the current practice? No.
No.
So the current practice is if you're certified for Metro Access, you get the free ride program.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You're going to create a new class of conditionally eligible.
Yes.
I see. Okay, so I didn't realize that's what that term meant. Uh-huh. I thought conditionally eligible meant pending some examination or something.
Well, it means that there are certain situations where the customer has the ability to use bus and rail. So a conditionally eligible customer, what that means is they have the ability on some occasions or some circumstances to use bus and rail, but they also have a legitimate need for paratransit for other circumstances. So by now having that nuance in our database for each customer, now you know that that individual would benefit and would have a legitimate need for the free ride program. But if you complete that assessment, and the conclusion that we walk away from is there is no ability for this customer to use bus and rail, then the real question is who will use that free ride benefit?
So
I'm not anticipating a change in that customer's condition after we've had that conversation unless they come back and disclose that to us, at which time then we would know that that person now does have an ability to use fixed route.
Like, Mr. Kent, it sounds like you are now going to review the 26,000 people who are currently both Metro Access eligible and free ride eligible to determine who ought to be classified as conditionally eligible and who ought not to be classified as conditionally eligible.
And we would do that when their current eligibility expires. We're not intending to go do...
But you still will have to review 26,000.
We have to review them anyway.
Yes.
They're reviewed every 3 years. So we're just, when we see them next time, the idea is to really have a robust discussion about can you use fixed route service.
I guess there's only one concern that I have, is that I understand that one important part of this is collecting data mm-hmm. that we did not have before to make judgments that we need to be able to use a data point to do so. Mm-hmm. But I'm concerned that that data collection initiative is foregoing really what could be a good news piece about people making their own changes. Mm-hmm. That is, if the fixed rail system is truly a good, accessible ride for them, and they make that choice on their own, then we benefit. Uh-huh. And so the encouragement of that seemingly is now coming under a less an encouragement and more, I hate to use the word punitive, but a more punitive way of looking at it.
Well, I think the messaging would be critical, but the idea would be that we've now framed the conversation of, isn't it a good thing that Metro has a free ride program? And also, isn't it fortunate that Metro Access customers who can use bus and rail would be able to have that benefit? And I think what we have not had much of a discussion on is the idea that when we give blanket eligibility to all the paratransit customers, there's the other part of the message missing, which is how much have we talked to them about the option of fixed route service actually being better in many ways. So, I mean, the intent behind it is for it to be more promotion rather than less.
Well, yes, Mr.
I just have a follow-up question. I would assume the inverse would happen, too, in your reviews, whereby somebody who may have been determined to need full Metro Access benefits at a later time for some unknown reason may become eligible to participate in the free ride program, that you would shift them?
Absolutely.
And how would that happen?
If at any time, if the customer initiates a call to us and says, my situation's changed, we're absolutely at liberty to come back and do another assessment. And there are situations that have caused, there are developments that have caused people's situation to change. In 2006, the bus fleet became fully accessible. At that point, that changed the conditions for many people.
I'm just wondering with this change, which I understand, but I'm wondering with this change if you're not increasing the quantity of requests. I mean, if you're basically asking somebody to get on one system or the other, indirectly. And are you not going to increase the volume of requests coming in for changes as a result of this policy?
I don't think so, because right now everybody has unrestricted eligibility, and it's only going to come up on an individual basis when each customer's eligibility is up for renewal. So it could easily be managed with our current process.
If I understand correctly, I think I do, you're saying the only people who could not get the free ride are people who have been found to be incapable of going on the fixed system.
Yes, sir.
So no amount of free ride, we could pay them, we could do it. They are incapable of using the fixed system.
Yes, sir.
All other people who are conditionally eligible will be given a choice proposition where you are eligible, but we encourage you through the free ride to use the other. I think we're achieving the goal that Mr. Zimmerman has set forth.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. Ms. Kissel, we have two items left in here.
So I was going to be just very brief. Preventative maintenance, I think we've already discussed this.
Right.
Each quarter, the process that we're going to take is that we will look at excess fare revenue that's earned, if any, over the budget amounts. And we will be recording that into a reserve account on a quarterly basis. That net balance in that reserve account will then be looked at the end of the year, and then the board will decide whether or not it can be designated for a funding capital project. And the next page just shows...
Before you move ahead,
yes,
I do have a concern there.
Okay.
And the concern has to do with the expenditure savings. Mm-hmm. I presume under revenue savings, what you're going to do is you're going to give us the monthly distribution of expected revenues that adds up to $108 million.
That's correct.
Okay. And, or that adds up to the total of revenue, including the $108 million. On expenditures, how are we going to know that there were, in fact, savings?
We're going to look at that on a quarterly basis. And as you know, there's a lot of puts and takes that happen, readjustments that happen on expenditure side many times, mm-hmm. quarter to quarter. So my recommendation is to wait until the end of the third quarter to understand what those variances are between budget. And we would make a recommendation to the board based upon what our forecast would be for the fourth quarter expenditures in terms of what could be set aside into that reserve account. And that's how we would do the expenditure.
Well, except that there's at least one item that's worth $15 million all by itself,
mm-hmm. right.
that if you do your accounting the way you always have, mm-hmm. you will accrue that $15 million, and we won't even know that it's gone.
Well, the item that you're speaking of is the accrued amount that we make for the arbitration mm-hmm. that we're currently involved in. Presumably, we would understand what that solution was prior to the end of the third quarter of FY 2011. So we would actually understand what the outcome of that was, and we would bring that forward to the board to decide how to utilize those funds if they were made available.
So it is your intention, and that's included in what you're talking about mm-hmm. here, that if, for instance, the court case turns out in such a way that the $15 million, that's half of the 30 that we're talking about right mm-hmm. now, no longer needs to be spent because the court determines that the arbitration was inappropriate or the arbitration decision was inappropriate, we would then have saved $15 million and you would immediately come to the board and say, this is, in fact, a savings.
That's correct.
Okay, we'll remember that.
We'll know it, but we'll bring it to the board
yes.
when it happens.
Okay. And at that time, we'll look at that $15 million and say, okay, this is saved. This goes back into capital right now.
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Dale.
Yeah, I'd just like to add to the conditions here. Should fare revenue or expenditure savings or unanticipated subsidies become available? I'm not all that sanguine that there'll be a federal bill, but if there is, it will have some money for us, and I'd like to be sure it goes to that purpose.
Good point.
So you wouldn't add that one.
Okay.
Okay.
And then there's a list of projects there, which, of course, as you noted, Mr. Benjamin, we would bring to the board to make a decision on. But these are projects that we would accelerate that are in our six-year CIP, and the board can make a decision on how to utilize those funds appropriately if they're available. The next page talks about a 5-cent surcharge. This was brought up by the district, and I know that Mr. Graham is now not here, so I'll just make the comment that the docket did include, the public hearing docket did include the potential to do a surcharge at stations at 5 cents. And the funds can be used by the jurisdiction for whatever purpose and capital improvements specifically that they would want. The discussion item that we bring forward to the EFA committee is the implementation, how do we implement this from a timeline point of view. I would not be able to implement it, or Metro would not be able to implement it until August 1, where we would technically be able to have that ability to program it. And then the board approval on the stations where the surcharge would apply. So those are the discussion points for the board.
And I think also in part of discussing the surcharge, did you have any comments, Mr. Graham? You started this one? Not yet? there's a question in terms of, let me take Mr. Giancola first.
Oh, no, go ahead. Finish it.
Okay. In that, the issue of limiting this by state and not by compact That's jurisdiction. For example, what you could have all of one in Virginia, two in Virginia, and they could be in the same jurisdictional piece, and it would be helpful to move them. I think it also will be helpful for us to be cognizant of where and how these impact our riders, because the other side of this is that we could have surcharges if we adopt this, and you could be at some of the most frequently used stations, and then one's fare would suddenly be drastically affected by it.
And you're absolutely right. In the public docket that we went out with, it actually indicated, it limited it to the two stations in each jurisdiction. So you'd have to go out to public hearing if you wanted to increase that amount, and that's the point I think you're making. Yeah.
So I guess that would mean that we would have to go back if we adopted this to change it from just the jurisdictions statewide, but rather the compact.
That's correct. You'd have to have another public hearing for that.
And I think that would could be appropriate. Mr. Giancola.
Yeah, City Administrator Neil Elbert asked me to comment on this. He is not able to be here today, but we certainly support this policy. And actually, I didn't notice that it isn't in the resolutions for the budget approval, and we'd actually like to propose maybe a 13th item on this resolution to, at this point, approve the imposition of this 5-cent surcharge on all entries and exits at certainly Union Station, which we've identified already for the purpose of funding specific station capital improvements, and directs that such surcharge be implemented concurrently with the implementation of the peak-to-peak fare surcharge. Funds collected from this surcharge shall be segregated in accounts for each station where the surcharge is imposed and shall be used solely for funding capital improvements at these stations under the procedures and adopted by the Metro Board of Directors. I mean, we've actually, I think, been working with Metro staff. The DDOT folks have identified 11 items of improvements to capacity and circulation at Union Station that could benefit from this type of program.
Question.
So I'd ask your consideration of the committee for this type of additional element in our resolution.
Question
on that. Would that be imposed consistent with the dates of the fiscal year? And would it be, is that something that, you know, that action would be required in each budget subsequent to this date? I mean, what is the end date of the surcharge?
I don't know the answer to that. I mean,
we know how much the value of the improvements are. We know how many riders are going through Union Station, so do we have any idea of the length of time that a surcharge would be necessary to accomplish the goal of the improvements?
Well, point, no, I don't think.
In the discussions that staff has been having with this, and I know the DC folks can correct me, but I believe the surcharge is to be used for Union Station improvements, and it's actually to be used to match a particular grant that the district has for these particular improvements. I don't know the time frame or the match required. I do know that we've done some preliminary analysis about the daily boardings in that station, about 34,000 daily boards at Union Station. So we're assuming it would be anywhere from $300,000 to $400,000 on an annual basis that could be generated from the 5-cent surcharge. What I don't know if that is enough for the match that they're looking for this particular grant. So that would answer your question.
And I think we're still developing the cost estimates on some of those.
And I guess my concern is implementing without knowing that. And that, I mean, I don't have a problem with the concept. I just want to make sure that, you know, one, we're not continuing this on beyond the date under which the, you know, which the projected improvements are completed. And also want to make sure that, you know, there's some understanding of what the end date is based on the cost of the improvements and the projected revenue. I think that's an important thing for us to know.
I think what we're asking is, what I think was placed in the docket was the implementation of the surcharge. And I think what you're saying, board approval of the stations, to me says that we are approving a process as well. Yeah. And I think that has to be part of that in order to address all of these issues about how this surcharge is going to impact the entire operation of the system.
So if I could make a recommendation, maybe the committee moves to the board in June to approve, as you indicated, the policy that was in the docket,
right,
and then subsequent to that in August, or come forward to a proposal that the district or whoever wants to do something.
It becomes a it becomes a proposal that's needed, and then we insert the station.
Right. Yes.
I'm a little bit confused in that I believe that under the Urban Mass Transportation Act, you cannot use revenues to match federal grants. So this would have to be a grant other than an FTA type grant.
I'm not familiar with the grant.
Okay. So the question I have is, how are we going to make this work? Since you can't use passenger revenues as a match. You have to show that passenger revenues are not available, and that they're needed for operating before you can use it for a capital grant. So, not clear to me how any of this would actually work.
Well, I might ask
Mr. Downey might know the answer.
Oh, sorry.
Or we do have an FTA representative in the room who may or may not wish to comment on that.
Mr. Downey. Done a lot of this.
Mr. Downey.
Yeah, I think part of the concept here, as I've understood it, is that these revenues would support debt that would become the local match. There is an FTA policy that allows revenue-based debt to be used as match.
So they would have to float a bond in order to do the match in order, and then use these to pay. Okay.
But I agree with the premise. I would support going forward with approving the concept as part of our action in June, so long as the option would be there any time over the balance of the year to identify a particular station and go forward with it.
And have that come to the board.
And may I ask that we be very specific in the wording, and that the capital improvement, that they be identified as capital improvements within the metro system, not just at the station. So these are improvements to the metro system itself, not I want to build something near the station or around the station or something else. It's got to be within the system.
That is, yeah. You're saying that it is a station infrastructure piece, not
part of our system,
yes,
not something else that's
metro,
next
yes.
door.
Yes. Mr. Downey?
Again, I don't know the specific project involved, but I know sort of general projects of this nature. If it is matching a federal grant, the federal grant can be used for station or station area improvements, including, I think, a fairly recent ruling by Federal Transit that this could be bicycle improvements within a half-mile radius. So I'm not sure you...
I'm actually trying to make this tighter than the federal rule because we are charging our passengers for this, all passengers, including those that are from other jurisdictions and
using that station.
Yeah, so. Very rarely or whatever. So it should be for improvements to our system, which is, I agree, tighter than the federal requirements.
But might preclude the concept of using this as match for a federal grant.
For some federal grants, that's right.
If I might say, I know I don't have direct knowledge about what the district wants to do, so, and I understand the discussion that's happening, but if there's anyone from the district that could spread some light on this?
Well,
you're talking about the types of work that'll be done?
Yes.
I'd be happy to talk about it a little bit.
I think we don't need
okay. Go ahead. Well, I'm sorry.
I want to also keep in mind that we were trying to do the policy piece, but go right ahead.
Well, let me go ahead and outline it. We have 11 items that are mentioned on capacity and circulation improvements, all of which are directly related to the metro station. And I can go through them. It's talking about building new platforms to the mezzanine elevators, move First Street entrance to the Metro Rail Station North, directly in front of the escalators which come down from Union Station. And I use Union Station every day, and they're just bottlenecks that exist there. A lot of these improvements would be associated with improving those bottlenecks. Expand fare control line with additional fare gates at some locations. Construct an additional escalator or stair from mezzanine to train station level in the vicinity of Union Station Post Office Branch. If you notice where the post office is, access to that is very difficult. And when the MARC train and the VRA train come in, you literally are stampedes of people come through. So, I mean, there's a whole series of things, and we can certainly share this list with the whole group later.
Okay. I think that gives us a concept of yeah. how it can be used, and I think it coincides with the Mr. Benjamin's point that it is the infrastructure within the authority that we're trying to improve and using this so that all of us share in that cost of it. Is there any clarity, as change or clarity that we need beyond that? It is part of our adoption, but I guess if we stated that is our motion, that we want to implement the surcharge the 5-cent surcharge on the entry and exits to station areas in each of the jurisdictions. Mm-hmm. I think each of the jurisdictions, not as you stated here, but in the compact jurisdictions.
We're restricted by what was in the public hearing docket.
Oh, that's right.
That's
okay.
The problem.
That's right. We said we have to come back. Right. We have to come back. It was stated as here on the paper, Maryland District and Virginia, whereas there are actually compact jurisdictions that would probably like to see it separated. And so that we can come back at a different time. And that the funds be used by the jurisdictions for the purpose of funding station-specific capital improvements at the stations. And I think stations we should draw out specifically that impact the metro facilities.
Mm-hmm.
And
we're adopting the concept, but we're not approving an individual.
No, we're not approving a project, and it says in the implementation piece, when staff comes back, then that will.
Clarification, will that be additional resolution of this policy in the statement? Okay.
Yes.
We'll add it to the existing resolution and maybe hopefully try to float some of that language to the committee prior to that so it could be clear.
Yeah, no, we'll have that.
Just to understand, I mean, is this, are we agreeing to a fare surcharge up to two stations in each jurisdiction? Is that?
We're agreeing to the concept.
I'm just trying to understand the motion that is before us.
It's not implementing the surcharge as adoption of this budget. It's adopting the use of a surcharge, and that surcharge now needs to be brought back to the board, mm-hmm. which the board needs to select what station with the projects identified and the process out.
But that sounds to me like we are agreeing to a further fare increase, details to be determined later. That's what I'm just asking a clarifying question. What I'm voting at.
Yes,
you are
the board
correct
is
in that.
Giving
it is a fare increase at some time on at some station and could be on multiple stations, and I think that's the point that we made.
Then I'd like to have a vote on the motion.
That's okay. Then the motion is on the table. I will we are not voting on the additional stations broken out now, but just as it's stated. If that is a motion that I'm making, is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor of the motion? The motion is as been presented here on adopting the concept of a surcharge and at the station areas to be used for capital improvements within the metro system at the designated stations.
details to be determined.
And to be voted on separately.
Yes, and it must be brought to the board separately for implementation. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay.
Please record me as voting no.
And record me as abstaining, please.
Okay. Got that? Okay.
Okay.
I think the motion passes.
Amen.
Okay.
Okay.
All righty. We're...
So next steps, I think we... next steps will be the resolution, which is getting a little bigger, and then we'll provide the budget and the resolution to the board of directors at the 24th meeting. And then there's appendix that has the plan of contracts and other items in there for your review. So that's the conclusion of that presentation.
Okay. Then what we're actually then is moving forward on the operating budget and the capital budget for approval by the board on the 24th of June.
That's correct.
And
and
the clarity that the plan of contracts we are taking no action on today as part of moving this forward with the approval to be subject to.
We're moving it forward to the board with no
recommendations. No recommendations, that's
okay.
Right. Yeah, okay. Is there a second on that? I'm getting
I'll
those two on the table. Okay.
Second. To approve both.
Yes.
I have questions.
Ms. Hewlett.
Yeah, a couple of questions. One, this includes the correction to the metro access cap.
It does.
Okay.
Yes.
And then what about the, as Mr. Zimmerman's request, that staff be directed to implement participating earned revenue reimbursement for local transit providers by October 1st. Can we include that, too? This is the motion.
In the resolution?
Yes.
Yes.
That's what I heard
yes.
him say.
And then I
what
think...
What was the last point?
It was
the regional sharing revenue.
And
bus
can I just
service.
Clarify what the motion would, what the language was? I didn't...
That should be direct, staff be directed to implement participating earned revenue reimbursement for local transit providers by October 1st. To bring it back to, at least bring it back to
To
us.
Bring it back to the board.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. Okay. Okay. Thank you.
And three, my question was to, I guess, Mr. Benjamin had raised the issue of appropriate ADA language that needed to be in the resolution, and Ms. O'Keefe said she was going to work on that too. So it'll include that language?
Yes.
Okay. And then not the plan of action. Okay.
That's good.
I'm clear. Thank you. Mr.
Daly.
Built within this, as I recall, we have now a strong incentive to use smart trip cards,
mm-hmm.
additional
yes.
cash fares. I recall some discussion about reducing the price of the smart trip card. Mm-hmm. Does that have to be part of this resolution, or is that a separate?
It is not part of this resolution currently.
Can it be done without having a part of this resolution?
Reducing the price of the smart trip card?
Yeah.
Can we reduce the
okay.
price? Social services agencies, right. But I think the question is broader than that.
Yeah, it is.
Right now we charge $5. I think the question is, can we reduce the price, or does that need to be in a resolution?
That's not a tariff matter.
Right.
Okay. It's not. I'm sorry.
It's not a tariff.
Not a tariff item. Okay, so we'll bring it up at a later time.
Yes. Okay.
I'm sorry. I was distracted. So we're going to put it in.
It's not required.
We don't need to put it in. Okay. Great. I'm sorry. Okay. Did you have anything?
I have one more question.
No, go ahead. Finish.
Okay, my question is, I want to go back to the revenue reimbursement for local transit providers. I started out by saying implementation. You'd be directed to have it implemented by October 1st, and you asked if you could bring it back to the board.
Yes.
And what would if you brought it back to the board before then? What would it take to have it implemented by October 1st?
Well, right now we're, and you'll see in the next presentation, we will be piloting that between July and September. And then we would then bring it to the board to have the analysis of that pilot, to have more detailed understanding of the regional ridership on the bus, and then tell you what the budget impact would be for that. And also recommend what could be a new regional pass product, which we don't currently have. I don't have in the tariff a regional pass product. So I would have to bring that to the board to actually make a recommendation and get approval to do. We'd have to have a public hearing, I believe, in order to implement that new pass product. No? Okay. Okay.
No public hearing.
Okay. So we wouldn't have to have that. But that's what I would bring to the board in October.
So it couldn't come to the board in September, you're saying?
No, it's no. The pilot program is between July and September.
Okay. Would you have questions? Yes, you can.
Okay. I just want to make clear that my intention was that the board direct that this be done by October 1. I will so move at the meeting on the 24th if it's not in the resolution. And I believe that if we fail to do that, we are going to see local providers, which are already moving in this direction, pulling out of the system, and the revenue would be lost anyway, and we'll begin to erode the integrated system we've got. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I'm going to insist that we actually implement this system by October 1st. It's 3.5 months. It's taken 10 years. The only reason to not do it was the technology wasn't there. The technology is there now, and I don't think there's a reason for any further delay.
And if the committee directs us to do that, we can shorten the pilot. It's just the pilot is actually a three-month pilot to actually test those products. But if you want to shorten that, direction.
Well, I think it's the consensus that we're all ready to move forward on it. So I don't have a problem with the October deadline. The question is that the deadline is going to drive then to make sure that the work in the pilot is done well. So. That's not an objection to that.
And it will drive a budget issue with Metro, and it'll be a budget. Actually, there'll probably be puts and takes. So if the revenue, I'm assuming this is what it's going to be. Revenue sharing will go from Metro to the jurisdictions. Mm-hmm. So what'll happen is we will be presenting to you what that budget gap will be, and then we'll recommend how to close it.
Okay.
Are you getting your motion?
I don't have a motion.
The resolution. No,
because
the
if Ms. Hewlett is not giving you your motion, I'll make the motion.
Ms. Hewlett is giving.
Those are the things that I asked. I was just, but now we have a different answer. You're saying that it can be done by October 1st.
No, I'm saying if you.
Saying now you can shorten the time period of the pilot program.
All I'm saying is the pilot is the technical testing of it.
Okay.
And the engineers have determined that there's a three-month pilot testing. If the committee wants to shorten that testing, that's what I heard.
Okay.
So I'm going to then turn around and say we're going to shorten the protocol and the testing, which will have some, risk associated with that. I don't know what that is, but we will do what the board is directing. This is a very technical implementation that. None of you have been associated
Ms. Kissel,
with. We have been. So I'm just recommending. And if you want to do something different, then that's fine.
I think what we can. Okay, I'll let Ms.
Just a question on that. Am I to understand the pilot is only for this? There's nothing else happening in the pilot that's affected that shortening the time frame could have an impact on?
No, the pilot is just a test that passes on the Smart Trip card regionally. That's the pilot. I have Nancy Brooks here, who's the director for fare collections, and we had intended to have this presentation on the next one, but we're having it now. So, go ahead.
This pilot does.
You can come up. Nancy Brooks actually comes from Boston. She was the fare collections director up at Boston. She's been with us for the last 2.5 months. We're very actually happy to have her to implement the program.
Good morning, board members. The technical pilot is also and was initially primarily designed to verify the operation and function of the business rules of all passes across the region. So we will have completed all lab testing, et cetera, done all verification on software, and this is a limited or a pilot implementation that will allow us to verify the operation and function, business rules, et cetera, of these passes in a short period of time. It's a two-month pilot. The technical capability goes in on July 20th, and by the end of September, we expect to have results that verify that operating rules, and we will also now be able to collect additional ridership data that will help us to determine the right sizing of the revenue profile for regional revenue sharing.
So it will be ready before or no later than October. Is that? And so
I can certainly support Carol's statement earlier that as of October, we felt we could be both technically ready and verified to move forward with a pass. And if there was an intent to shorten that, we could certainly look at tweaking the pilot schedule to attempt to shorten that.
Quite the answer I thought I was waiting for, and that is, and I think this is where Mr. McKay was going. Are we in any way compromising the ability to be sure that passes work properly when we tell everybody that they can get passes in doing this pilot? And if you shorten it, is that compromised in any way?
It's certainly a function of the degree to which you shorten it. Shaving some number of days, possibly a week or so off of it, I don't think we'll compromise that. It depends. It's only expected to run, be conducted, from the latter part of July through mid to the latter part of September, allowing for a compilation of results before October 1. So if you shorten it by a mere number of days, perhaps a week, I think we could accomplish that without impact to the technical quality. If we're compromised much further than that, if we are expected to shave weeks to a month off, yes, I do believe there would be a degree of risk, and we'd have to assess that.
Well, how many? I guess then to accommodate Mr. Zimmerman's date request, is that a matter of weeks, a matter of days to meet the October 1st deadline?
Can you do it? Can you meet October 1st?
Yes, what Carol said, Ms. Kissel said, it can be done. There would be some degree of risk on how much we compromised. If we compromised in a matter of days, perhaps weeks, little or no risk.
That's exactly what I'm asking. May
I suggest a statement that it be by October 1st, subject to the approval and success of the pilot?
Absolutely.
Because we're not going to implement it if it does not work. And we're simply said that we would like to have it. And we're not asking you to shave off your capacity to do so. We're simply saying here's why the discussion is date-driven. I think we've all been waiting for it, and it's not been given any conscience or consistency that it's being worked on. You're saying the pilot is coming forward. I think the date is only an opportunity to ensure that we stay focused on this. The pilot is there. If you have trouble with the pilot, you are not going to be able to implement it. I would suspect that.
Absolutely.
So October 1st is fine.
Yes. Madam Chair?
Yes.
Who is going to pilot the Smart Trip passes this summer? Do you have a particular group of rail or bus users in mind?
The expectation, although the pilot participant, the pool has not been finally defined. We're in the process of planning that now. The expectation is to include representation from all the key regional bus services that connect with, as well as within Metro Rail and Metro Bus.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Follow up on that. The success of this is not simply the technology being put in place. It is the user's understanding how to use it. If you were told this has to be in place on October 1st, at what point do users have to start thinking about doing business differently? How will they get their pass? How will they put it on? You know, can all that be in place timely, as opposed to saying October 1st is the magic date? I think it's important to do it right.
Correct. I feel comfortable committing to is the completion of the pilot. There are a number of other readiness aspects, communication, proper policies at place, reporting, et cetera, that also have to be addressed, and I'm not prepared here to discuss what risk those may be at or how they may have to be shortened or compromised to meet a date that I'm now hearing from the board.
What would November 1st work for you? I know you don't.
Well, okay. Actually, can I make a recommendation? I think technically the engineers and Nancy's team are ready to do this pilot and have it ready by the end of September, as she's indicated. The plan that we had was to come back to the board in October with, we're ready, here's the communication plan, we've already done that, here's the revenue plan that we're starting, here's the budget impact that it's going to have on Metro and the jurisdictions, here's the possible new regional pass price that you may want to consider. Those are the decisions that we're going to bring to the board, and I think was part of the whole funding agreement about this regional pass. That recommendation is still required by the board, so I don't want to not give that board the opportunity to review that. And that's what I'm talking about, that we will prepare for October. So,
prepare for a board action on
a board action on October. That's correct.
Not a full-fledged implementation unless it were ready to be implemented.
Does that not?
Okay.
Yes. Mr. Zimmerman, go ahead.
Madam Chairman, ultimately, I am somewhat less concerned with the actual deadline, though it seems to me this could be October 1st, 3.5 months from now, should be plenty of time, especially since it's been kicked around for years, and there, in fact, is already pilot effort being made with a local system. But what really matters is that there be a deadline. That is what's most important to me. And when I hear, well, you know, October 1 could be problems, and there's a week here and this week here, and then you ask, well, does November make a difference, as Ms. Hewlett tried a moment ago, and you get, well, can't really say. That's the thing that most concerns me. I want a deadline. I want a point at which they say this will be implemented. If it isn't October 1, tell me a date that works better, but I want a point by which they're going to fix this problem. I don't think it's going to happen until it's fixed. If we have a thing where it's iffy and we have to see the results, I know how that works, then it's scheduled for the October meeting, and of course it gets delayed at the last minute, and it winds up being considered in December, and before you know it, nothing can be implemented until the following fiscal year, and millions again have been lost by these transit providers, which right now are struggling. So I want a deadline, and I want it not any farther out than it has to be.
Mm-hmm. I can commit that we would bring it to the FA committee on October 14th with a board action on October.
Again, I'm looking for a deadline for actually implementing something so that we have reciprocity in the fare structure with the local participating providers.
I think
I'm not interested in the committee schedule. I'm interested in when we would actually have
to do that. Is the board action, I guess this is a question that I have, am I not required to get a board action to implement this? I guess that's my question.
And my proposal, Madam Chairman, was that the board action is on June 24th when we adopt the budget, and I'm proposing that we incorporate the direction in the budget.
The board needs to approve the price.
Well, let me hear what. So it would be an approval process.
We also have to deal with a revenue loss and where we're going to get that.
There has to
be an action
to us.
I think Mr. Zimmerman is asked to include it in the resolution.
May I make a suggestion? Mm-hmm. Before the board meeting at the end of this month, we will give you a schedule that says when we will implement this. For us to sit here today, obviously, we can't do it. But we'll commit to you before the board meeting. You will have a schedule leading right up to implementation.
Thank you. Could you include in that what the financial impacts are so that we don't – what I don't want to have is, oh, well, then we'll just increase everybody's subsidy so we take it out of this pocket and put it in that pocket. There's got to be a solution other than that. So we need a solution.
We can make an assumption. The purpose of the pilot is to understand what the budget impact is, or one of the purposes of the pilot. But we can bring back what we think that is.
I think we've been quite clear what we've asked for.
I think that's okay.
Okay. I'll ask for the implementation as well as the revenue piece. And that would come back, and Mr. Searle said he'd give us a schedule. Okay. And so the resolution would be amended to include that as an implementation of a regional revenue.
Okay.
Is there anything else to go into the resolution that we have not covered? Yes.
I have a question on the existing resolution number 5. Authorizes general manager to reduce the reserve parking fee at stations which has excess capacity to an amount necessary to use up the excess parking capacity. Is that the staff already have, has that been our practice, and has staff been authorized to do that in the past? I thought we were doing the exact opposite.
I thought we were
taking away reserve parking that wasn't being used over a period of time and opening that back up to general parking.
We have been doing that. That's a practice.
What you're suggesting here is a complete change in the way we do that? because this is the exact opposite.
It is the complete change, yes.
Well, I definitely have a problem with that. We have stations that have reserved parking that are not being used today, and we're making passengers drive past those every day to park in the nosebleed section of parking structures and walk past those every day, and they're just sitting underutilized. And we went to great pains to avoid general parking increases, and one way we did that was to increase the reserve parking fee, right. So this is contrary to that. So I don't agree at all with the concept that's in number five. I think if people are not using the reserve parking, then we should take the reserve parking away. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get into a situation where every station has a different rate based on whether it's used or not. If it's not used, we should take it down and open it up to general parking again. So I for one, favor the way we've been doing it. I don't think this change accomplishes what at least I would hope we would want to accomplish with parking policy.
I think it was a recommendation.
Yeah, and let me support Mr. McKay on this, because it also undercuts paragraph 4 of the resolution, where we're increasing reserve parking fee from $55 to $65. We undercut that by giving the general manager the ability in parking lots where reserve parking is not being used, mm-hmm. to decrease the fee. And so I think that that's inconsistent in a way that I think we should take paragraph 5 out.
Mm-hmm. Any other comments? No. Well, let me ask. Paragraph 4 dealt with an increase that was based on revenue.
Yes.
Right? And paragraph 5 also deals with revenue, but it simply says rather than leave the fee at, let's say, the new fee at mm-hmm. 65, have some demand fee implemented.
It was trying to capture the demand capacity.
And if you don't do that and you put it back into the regular parking, mm-hmm. then it would be at the five, whatever it is now, $5 or whatever, mm-hmm. or $4.50. And I'm my only concern is that we talk about two things a lot about this, and that is how do we direct demand and capture mm-hmm. revenue appropriately, and how do we keep our customers as be as sensitive as possible to our customers. And here it's kind of doing both of those, and I don't understand the challenges here.
My challenge is we can adjust the quantity of available spaces, not the price for the reserve parking. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, that's what my issue is, and that's been the policy and the way we've done this before. We have demand management. If the demand is not being met, then we take away reserve parking. In some stations where we need more, we have a process under which we can evaluate whether or not we need more. Mm-hmm. My issue is you should be changing the quantity of spaces available based on demand, not the price that people pay based on the demand. And I think that's the distinction.
Well, we've got to keep the same revenue projection in place, because otherwise we end up with a budget that's yeah. out of balance. Mm-hmm. Well, and we have a revenue assumption associated with this. And if we undercut it, you know, we don't have the revenues.
Right.
Well, I presume that the revenue assumption is based upon the way the world works and the way the world has worked, which is really what Mr. McKay is talking about.
Right.
And it tends to be a trade-off. What happens is if you reduce the number of spaces that are empty, which means you're not getting any riders, and you get other people to use those spaces, you're now getting rail fares. And that was the theory at that point, and that was the trade-off that you did. So I think Mr. McKay's position is a pretty reasonable one. Not clear to me that we are really doing what we should do if we're trying to encourage more people to use reserve parking as opposed to encourage people to use rail.
Is there a motion to remove this, or?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay. It's at it. Okay. I think we're at the end of this.
Yes, I have a statement.
The motion has passed. I think I'll call for the motion as amended on the resolution that we move forward on the capital and the operating budget. All those in favor?
No, I have a statement I wish to make.
Can you make it under discussion?
No, before I vote. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Mr. Graham.
Madam Chair, I have enormous respect for this board And I think this has been, this is the 12th budget discussion that I have been through, and it's been a very good discussion. I want to commend you for how you've handled this. I want to commend our chairman for how he has handled this. At the last occasion to vote on the budget, when we directed staff to prepare a major fare increase outlined by the board, I voted yes at that time because I was the only DC member present, and including alternates. And had I voted no, it would have been a one-vote jurisdictional veto, which I was unwilling to do at that time, because while I support the concept of jurisdictional veto, and I think it's worked well in this system, I did not want to derail this process at that time. However, at this committee meeting, you know, I am going to be voting no on this budget, and I want to very briefly explain why. I think, and let me also emphasize, because I don't want to ignite a lot of passionate feelings, but I know every member of this board, and I know they care very deeply about all of the ridership in our system. But I think that this proposal before us is unfair to those least able to pay. 25% of the people I represent in Ward 1 live below the federal poverty level. These are people that I directly represent, and I'm keenly aware of how they will be hurt by an extra 25 cents per bus ride, 50 cents per day, $2.50 per week. For some riders, that may not have much impact. But for many of the people I represent, and many of the people in the District of Columbia and throughout the region, it is a very significant impact. Compared with rail riders, Metro bus riders are 40% poorer and are 10 times less likely to have an automobile. Thus, they are far more transit dependent. Yet the price of a weekly bus pass used by some of our riders who are least able to pay will increase by 36%. Far more than any of the rail fare increases. The disparity in the proposed fare increase is even more profound when you consider that at least 52%, and I think it's actually higher, but at least 52% of rail riders get transit benefits from their employers, compared with only 24% of bus riders. And so bus riders do not have, to the same extent, the employer benefits that our rail riders have. And I think this is a very important factor that it needs to be better understood in the public. This unfairness continues with a disproportionately small increase for our longest distance rail riders. Many of these long distance riders do not even live in the compact area. So the jurisdictional support is not present. There's no jurisdictional subsidy from Loudoun County, for example. So they don't support the system with their taxes like the rest of us, and we continue to really let them off the hook. Finally, I know there has been very strong opposition that has maintained zero increase in parking fees. We've discussed this. I disagree with it. Others feel very strongly about it, and that's the way it is. It would be hard for me to support this fare increase if the burden were equally shared, but it's not. And in fact, this is going to fall, these fare increases are going to fall most heavily on those who are least able to pay for them. And again, I don't want people thinking that I'm in any way inconsistent, because I would have voted no at the last opportunity, but for the fact that I have a great deal of respect for this process, and I wanted to see it move forward, and I did not want a single vote jurisdictional veto, but I will be voting no today. Thank you.
Any other comments? We have not called for the vote. So now, all those in favor of the motion to move the operating budget forward, say aye.
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 Those opposed?
No. Please record me as voting no.
Will do. And lastly, it's moving forward on the capital resolution as well, with the plan of contracts with no recommendation. All those in favor of that resolution? I'm sorry, a motion on the table. And then I'll move it, and is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor of that resolution? Opposed? Okay. Now, all those, that those two resolutions pass, gosh, it's a long morning, and it's just about gone. Ms. Kissel, let's see how we move these items out. Let me start with with 3C, and it is one that I'm going to ask that we defer because it has not had the kind of discussions that I understand is needed in the jurisdiction.
On the West Falls Church?
On the West Falls Church, yes.
Okay.
And on D, is this one that we can move without? I think it is such a good news piece that it should move quickly as an action item.
It's a minor grant that
okay.
I know.
Is there a motion? Do we need a presentation?
So moved. Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. All right.
Could we, Chairwoman, the B, we missed B, which is a budget action. It's a very simple item.
Yes, that's the three
I move approval.
Item. All those in second?
On item B?
Yes.
Okay.
That one is, we know, is the FY10 moving
second.
Forward.
Okay.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, thank you. All right. We did, and the projects for discretionary grants. All right, so last one that we need.
Okay, we'll go to that one. Okay.
If you'll give a brief description and just we'll give you
yeah, brief description. Actually, these are, we can go to the discretionary grants presentation. Mm-hmm. This came up in late April, early May, where the U.S. DOT had availability, discretionary money for application for these grants. We were notified. We quickly actually put together projects that would comply under the discretionary grant criteria. And as you can see, they're listed here. We have program managers here to answer any questions that you have on these. These projects, we either we did the same type of process to understand if these projects would fit the grant criteria. They're in our CIP. They are projects that we've actually accelerated from the prior years forward to apply for these grant monies. They're not in our FY11 capital program, so they would be new. Just to quickly go through on the next page, the requirement for the applying for these grants is that we would have to have a committed match for them. They're currently not in our FY11 program, so we would have to look to the jurisdictions to match. Did you vote on this? I'm sorry.
No, we did not vote on these.
Voted on D.
Continue.
There's a little interest, but keep going.
Okay, yeah.
And we can get to the.
So we basically, if we are awarded all of these grants, which presumably would not happen because they're being competed across the United States and other properties, we would have to have a $15 million total match. The recommendation here and the recommendation to the jurisdictions were that once we reconcile the Metro Matters program, which I'm required to do in October and bring that to the board, there could be, of that Metro Matters program of $2.7 billion, there could be monies that actually were not spent. The board then, either that monies are returned to the jurisdictions or the board makes a determination on what those monies should be earmarked for. These could be potential projects that those monies can be earmarked for. And that's really this presentation in brief.
Okay. Is there a motion, Mr. Downey?
So moved. Second.
Second.
Madam, just to be clear,
yes.
If we don't apply for these funds, obviously we won't get them.
Right.
If we do apply and we do get them, they're incremental to what's in the capital program, and we need to just find a way to provide the match.
That's correct. And the requirement for the application is that we have show some commitment from our jurisdictions, which are we are in the process of doing. So,
okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Okay. Thank you. We have basically talked ourselves through the other two items, and the last is the financial report, and I think that one is in our packet, and I will simply note. You can quickly note the changes that have been made, and then you can keep them.
Yes.
Mrs. C.
I will note on the – we won't do the Smart Trip presentation because, as you noted, we already discussed it.
We have had that discussion,
right.
And we did the project.
On the financial operations, Year-to-date, we have 2 months left of the fiscal year. We have a $48 million subsidy deficit. The action that you just approved would allow use of the carryover, $5.6 million, to offset that. So when I come before you next month, that will be further reduced. We will be applying the additional ARRA funds that the board approved to offset the deficit. That adjustment will be made next month when you see this. And that'll be another $8 million. I'm sorry, the adjustment will be made in June, so you actually will not see it until July. So a clarification. So we're
later than that, because you don't give us the June report until
we don't give you the June report September. Until September. So we're going to give you a view of it in July. The adjustment for that will be made in June, so you will see that adjustment in July.
Questions?
Yes.
Will the budget have been balanced?
No, as I had indicated, we had in January projected a shortfall of about $38 million in January. We put together a mitigation plan that the board approved that we would actually use to mitigate that. I have been in. I'm sorry?
When we approved it, it was $38 million or $39 million.
That's correct. I'm just telling you the circumstances in January. In February, we had three snow days where we lost 3 days of revenue and we had expenses.
That's a long explanation. The question is, you're having measures being taken. Saying even with all those, you're still going to leak the in the red?
That's correct.
And how does that get paid?
How it happens is that deficit, it's not unlike prior deficits that the Metro has experienced. In 2007, you had a $19 million deficit. This deficit will be carried forward into FY 2012. So when you develop the FY, when we develop the FY 2012 budget, we will immediately have a deficit which we would have to cover. That's how it works.
And could you estimate what you think it's likely to look like at the end of the
year? Last month, I had given you an estimate of $15 to $20 million that we were trying to keep the deficit at. I think that's going to increase primarily due to some of the increases we've had on Metro Access. We forecasted Metro Access would be $10 million over budget. It is becoming $15 million over budget. The other driver on that is And the bigger one is the snow. I had projected that we would have a bigger reimbursement from FEMA, and we will not be getting that. We anticipate that the reimbursement for the snow event that we had for 3 days will only be a $3 million reimbursement.
So where we're going to end up again is?
We may be at a $25 million deficit at the end of the year.
Which 19 is snow.
Actually, 21 is snow because we had revenue in there as well, but we were offsetting. So.
Any other questions on it? None? Okay. There's no other business coming before. This meeting is now adjourned.
Oh, all right.